Good morning. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm here today on Friday, June the 7th, in the President's Club of United Airlines, getting ready to depart for Los Angeles, California, where we're going to be performing at the Magic Castle in Hollywood this next week from the 10th through the 16th. I'll be working the late night shift and the close-up gallery. So before that, I should have a little bit of time to kind of see who's hanging out and have my little recorder here and just have some interesting chats with a lot of interesting people, I'm hoping. So it should be an adventure for both of us. So come along for the ride. I think you'll have a great time. But right now, just kind of enjoying donuts once again. They have added back to the menu. They took off those delicious Entenmann donuts some time ago and then added the healthier choice, I guess, with bagels and English muffins. Well, now they have added back the little donut bites, I guess those little munchkin things with the powdered sugar and also the chocolate ones, which I'm having, along with a little bit of yogurt to offset the healthy side, I guess. Cup of coffee, and I'll be good to go. We're going to be boarding here shortly, and so I'll see you on the other side in California. So for now, Scotty out. Well, first things first, I am completely satiated. I made the right decision over here, I believe, having just arrived at the John Wayne Airport here in Orange County, California. And, of course, the first thing is In-N-Out Burger. So set my sat-nav or my GPS to look for the nearest one. And so I went for the double-double. Got to do that, man. So from here, we're off to Oakland. So for now, Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I am in Oakland, California, just looking across the San Francisco Bay into the city from here. I'm visiting with my good childhood friend from long ago. We've grown up since kindergarten, roommates in college. Here he is, none other than Walter Turner. Hey, Walt.
Scott, good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Welcome to Oakland.
Thank you. I'm having a wonderful time here. Enjoyed yesterday. Went to Napa Valley, and that was just awesome. And then today went over to the city and Fisherman's Wharf and some other places.
39, Ghirardelli Square.
Yes, we did. Yep. Kind of hit all the high points within 2 days. If you only got 2 days to go to San Francisco, you would recommend doing what?
Just what we did, I guess.
There we go. Exactly.
It worked out pretty well.
Now, of course, this podcast is about magic and magicians, and for those who might be interested, that you kind of got started in magic and kind of had a little bit of I got interested because of what you were doing way back when. You want to kind of go back and tell that story?
Well, I always tell people that your entire magic career is a debt to me, because I introduced you to card magic in the summer of 1972 when we were traveling, spent 3 months together in Europe, driving around in a Volkswagen Beetle. And early on in that trip, we were in London, and we went to this huge bookstore there, a very famous one, the name of which I forget at the moment.
Harrods or Selfridges or...
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I bought a book on card trick magic and spent the entire time as you were the driver for the most part, so I was in the passenger seat, and I was reading that book and had a deck of cards and was bugging you the entire trip trying to master a couple of card tricks. And
you showed me and we were camping in the tents at night, and so
right
by the camp light, that's when you had the chance to say, pick a card, any card.
I think I did it while we were driving as well, but yeah, probably.
yes, you did.
Did it for the most part in the tent. But in any case, I didn't get much out of it at the end of the trip. I felt like I'd really done all I could with it, so I remember giving you the book. And for 5 years, I heard nothing about it, but then suddenly I started hearing rumors that you were actually using it in a fairly effective way. And, of course, you went on to become a very important professional magician. And, again, I think it's probably safe to say that you might never have gone down that road if it hadn't been for that summer we spent together in that book I gave you at the end of that trip.
Well, you were quite the navigator, I would say. You know, you did point me down the correct roads, or we wouldn't have gotten where we traveled over 5,000 miles that summer. Goodness sakes, you know, we landed in Luxembourg and went over into Germany, bought that Volkswagen Bug from a buddy of ours who was in the military at the time, and went up into England and through London, and then on up to Muirfield, Scotland for the
British Open.
British Open,
which was at Muirfield that year.
And remember, the winner was
Lee Trevino.
Lee Trevino.
Yeah.
We spent quite a bit of time. I guess we were probably in the in England and Scotland for about 10 days or so, then came back down, as I recall, and then to France and back down to Germany. Yeah, because we came through Calais and then down through Germany into Italy and over to Venice, back over through Florence, down to Rome, and then up along the southern coast of France, then over into southern Spain, as
yes.
I recall, and then
back up through France, through Paris, and back to Germany, sold a car, and then took the bus back over to catch our plane. So
it was a great trip.
That was a good time. And so why was it that you actually gave up magic? I mean, why did you decide after? I mean, did you learn all you thought you could?
I felt I'd done all I could with it, actually. I mean, I as you will recall, I wasn't that good at shuffling. And I think that a lot of people will say that that's probably an absolute requirement for being a good magician,
well,
an aptitude for shuffling. And
well, they really didn't go into the detail in that particular book. I want to say that the book may have been Greater Magic. It seemed like a Hilliard book. It was a particularly important book, but
was it really?
Yeah, but there are not a lot of things necessarily that, as I recall, that it would go into detail on some of the basics. It assumed that you would know how to do certain things, and obviously you didn't know how to shuffle.
Right, I didn't know how to shuffle, and I don't remember impressing you too many times with any of the tricks. So I just felt like I probably wasn't going anywhere with it.
No, I remember being
unimpressed.
Right, yes. but that did not deter you, because I recall night after night in that pup tent that you would, as we, you know, would pitch it wherever we went along the road, that you would come up with a new trick you just learned in the car that day.
Yeah, I stuck with it for a while, that's for sure. We didn't have good lights, you couldn't really read, but I could manage to practice with those cards.
That wasn't bad, yes.
Yeah.
I don't remember, did the cards did not come with the book.
No.
I think you bought those separately.
I believe that's right.
Okay.
I can't be sure of that.
Now, were you interested in watching magic? I mean, what's your...
I've enjoyed watching you. I mean, I go to Las Vegas every so often. I like those big grand shows that the magicians put on in Las Vegas, and you got me going to that Mack King show in Las Vegas, which I really enjoy. So, sure, I enjoy magic. I think most people enjoy magic from time to time.
As a non-magician, I mean, you are a successful attorney over here in Oakland, partner
mm-hmm.
at a law firm, and so that, have you ever had a magician as a...
Well, as a matter of fact, yes, when we have a holiday party every year. There's 60 lawyers in my firm, so our holiday party are all the attorneys, all the staff, and the spouses, so it's probably 150 people at the dinner, and we usually have entertainment of some kind, and one year we had a magician perform, and it was very well received.
Everybody had a good time.
I think so.
Yeah, and so that would not deter your company from having a magician in the future.
Absolutely not. I would be surprised if we don't have
a magician. Did you have anything to do as far as recommending, hey, we need to have a magician perform?
I did not.
You're just kind of surprised.
I was as surprised as everyone else. I'm delighted, of course.
You would have said, hey, we should have Scott.
I would have recommended that they engage you, even though you would have had to come all the way from Texas. But
it would have been nice to come and visit with you again.
Of course. So maybe next time. I mean, it could happen a few years from now.
Maybe so. So who would you say is your favorite magician?
I like Penn and Teller.
They are good.
I think they're outstanding. I think they're brilliant comedians, too. And so I love their show.
What you like mainly? Is just their brand of humor?
Yeah.
Being a humorist that you are.
Yeah.
I
love their humor.
You were a class comedian in high school. And
that's true.
Yeah.
So, but I do. I mean, their effects seem incredible to me, but I'm hardly a judge of whether that's in fact the case. But I think their showmanship is truly outstanding.
Mm-hmm. And so you see their show whenever you get to Vegas from time to time?
I've seen it more than once, I don't see it every time.
Right. You go to other shows, I guess. You enjoy Vegas.
I go to, like, last year we went to Jersey Boys and Blue Man and show and some of the comedians we've gone to see, too. And then, you know, Elton John one year.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you know, just we like that Vegas. We go to Vegas once a year because I have a conference there that I go to for continuing legal education. And we just go for a couple nights. That's about all I really want of Las Vegas in a year. But for two nights, it's fun.
And you always tell your friends that Matt King's a good show to go see.
Absolutely.
You would recommend him?
His show is great. I've seen it three times now.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Very good. There you go, Mac. He loves you. So the rest of us. Well, Walt, thanks very much. Appreciate you being our guest.
Oh,
I thought
that
just interesting, some of the people might like this. We had a great time, as I said, here in San Francisco and around Oakland and enjoying the foods. Certainly that chowder bowl of, what was that, the bread bowl of sourdough bread with
clam chowder
over there at Fisherman's Wharf.
At the Fisherman's Grotto restaurant.
Yep. And then over at
Ghirardelli.
Ghirardelli's chocolate. That's like the epicenter of chocolate there, isn't it?
I think it is.
Yeah. So that was, some kind of delicious. Of course, then yesterday we had dinner after we went to a couple of wineries. We went to
Stag Leap Vineyards, and we went to Now I'm going to forget, but we went to Silverado Vineyard, which is the vineyard that's owned by the son-in-law
and daughter
of Walt Disney. And from there, we drove up to St. Helena and had dinner at the Italian restaurant Taravigna.
Right.
And it was a beautiful day in the Napa Valley yesterday, and it's always fun to get up there to the wine country. You know, I've lived here now for 35 years, but we tend not to do any of the stuff like we were doing this weekend unless somebody from out of town is here. You just don't. So it's always
stay good. Closer to home.
Well, it's just the point, though, is that it's great when when you do have people from out of town in, because it gets you to do these things that are so wonderful that are here in the Bay Area that we otherwise don't do, and ask ourselves why. So,
well, I'm looking forward also to you coming down to L.A. to Magic Castle. I'm going to be starting there tomorrow, and you're going to come and join us Friday and Saturday.
That's right, and I just got a preview of the show in my dining room a few minutes ago, and my wife and stepson met Scott for the first time, and they were rather blown away by the magic that he performed on a close-up basis for us. So very much looking forward to coming back to the Magic Castle, where I saw you perform, I think, 20 years ago.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Oh, by the way, this is interesting. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What would be your magic word? And not being a magician, it's interesting to hear it from a non-magician standpoint. And I don't mean that necessarily like abracadabra. I mean, what is your credo? What is the philosophy of life? It could be a phrase, not necessarily a word, but what would be your mantra or your magic word?
Carpe diem.
Carpe diem. I've not heard that, but I guess being an attorney, it sounds like something. Seize the day.
Great.
Thank you, Walt. I appreciate it. That was Walt Turner. And this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com saying, Scotty out. Well, it's Tuesday morning, the day after my premiere at the Magic Castle for this year in 2013 in the close-up gallery. And it was just a heck of a lot of fun. Everything went very well. Got to meet with some friends who are working there. We'll be talking with them later this week. So this will be on the podcast a little bit later. You'll be hearing some from Ben Seidman as well as Chris Korn. And I ran into someone else that I thought was kind of special, and that is Mark and Nonnie Darnell. Mark Wilson and Nonnie Darnell, I should say. And they are running a magic class at Magic Castle, and we'll speak with them Wednesday evening. And there might be some other surprises, guests that we'll get to chat with here later this week. As I said, now it's Tuesday morning, and we're at Cantor's Delicatessen, which is world-famous, 24 hours open. So we're getting ready for a little breakfast here right now. And after we enjoy that, we'll head out and find something else to do. But anyhow, I thought I'd just kind of touch base with and let you guys bring you along with me on this magical mystery tour of the Magic Castle this week, so you can experience everything I do as I do it. So it's been kind of some fun. Hope you're enjoying this too. So until a little bit later, Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and although this is the week of the Magic Castle, as I said, we're going to be talking with different magicians there, but of course L.A. is a place where there are just tons of other guys around here, and upon the suggestion of another friend of mine, Charlie Randall, suggested I come over to Dean Dill's barbershop and get my hair cut. It's kind of shaggy, so I thought now is probably a good time, but just before you cut my hair, I thought we'd have a chat with Dean Dill. Hey, Dean, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you very much.
And, yeah, it's your first podcast, I take it.
I think so.
Okay.
Yes.
And we'll kind of just go around the room because we've got a bunch of other guys. Introduce yourselves.
I'm Ernie Lynn, friend of Dean's.
Michael Rangel.
Hi, Pete Byrow here.
So
and Eddie Medrano just stepped out for a second.
Eddie just stepped out for a smoke or something, I guess.
No, he just stepped out for balloons.
Yeah. And so this is your barbershop, and you've been here in Glendale, which is just about 20 minutes from the castle approximately?
Yeah.
Have you been here for how long?
10, 11 years in this spot here, yep. But I've been cutting hair in Glendale for over 35 years.
So are you a native
of Los
Angeles area?
Yes.
Then I see.
But I've lived in Glendale pretty much all my life.
Now, most people, of course, know you as the creator of a lot of magic effects, most importantly, I guess, Dean's Box.
Yes.
That you created. What year would that come out? That was long about 91?
That was out in 2000.
2000, was it that? Okay, I was thinking longer than that. Okay.
But before that, Blizzard had come out. And
well, that was yours.
That was the one that kind of got my name going. with that card trick called Blizzard.
Mm-hmm. And for those who might be neophytes to the podcast, you want to explain about the card trick and about the blank cards, what the effect is of Blizzard?
Well, I hate to give away the effect unless somebody needs to see it, but basically it's almost like the ultimate invisible deck where somebody thinks of a card and we go through an entire blank deck of playing cards, and the only card that they're thinking of is the only card printed in that deck. And the deck can be examined. That's the strength of Blizzard.
Yeah.
And in most cases, you're using rough and smooth or gimmick decks, but in this case, I have a clean deck, and it pretty much throws everybody for a loop.
I remember when that came out at the, I guess, an IBM convention, you know, some years ago, and that Mike Close was performing that.
Yes, Mike Close took it off, took it and did it and was selling like hotcakes.
Mike Close is the first guy I saw do it, and I had no idea. It fooled me back. Absolutely.
Me too. I may have been with you when he was showing that at a convention.
Yeah,
it was just
up in Vegas.
Yeah. Yep. That was... it was awesome and still is. And those kinds of things, like Dean's Box and Blizzard, are available through your website, which I guess is...
Yes, they are. DeanDill.com.
Can't beat that.
Right.
Easy enough. And how... Walk me through your creative process. You know, what is... how do you come up with the idea? Do you have an idea first? Have you seen something? You got something cooking?
As far as Blizzard is concerned, there was an old trick where you had to... cut the deck a few times, and by cutting the left side or the right side would give you certain information. And at the very end of the trick, you'd turn the card over, and it was blank. But he named the card before he showed it blank. And then he showed the whole deck blank.
Yeah.
This is the trick that I had seen previously. And I thought to myself, well, that's kind of clever, but geez, I'd sure like to see that card be a reality. And that's when I start thinking, how could I make that card a reality, make it the only card in a blank deck, and that's where Blizzard was born.
Gotcha. And with Dean's Box, it's something completely different because that's really not a card effect, right?
No, the box trick came from Paul Curry's Linked.
Mm-hmm.
If you look in Paul Curry's book, Worlds Beyond, or any of his manuscripts, he's got a trick where you take two ropes and you put them behind your neck.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle of the ropes become linked once you bring them over your head. And a friend of mine, Jack Hart, had shown me that trick, and I didn't even know it was Paul Curry's for years. So I used to do it in my lecture and credit my friend Jack as the creator, not knowing it was really Paul Curry's. Anyway, after doing this trick for a while behind the neck, and I didn't like the way it was framed. Every time I'd do the trick, my hair would get tangled up in the rope, and I thought, where could I frame this trick so that it looks really cool? So in my workshop, I grabbed a cardboard box. I cut a hole in the top and two holes in the sides and stuck the ropes through and put them up through this little trap door in the top. And when I pulled them out, they were linked using Paul Curry's principle.
Yeah.
And then I created a second phase of the trick, took it to work, my barbershop, and started doing it for magicians and lay people, because when you're a barber, you have a lot of access to spectators all the time. They're coming
somebody
and going.
Every 15 minutes.
So that's the beauty of being a barber and a magician. So I started showing it around. It was fooling everybody so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, so bad. We're talking about David Williamson coming down and John Carney and Weber and everybody who had even knew the principal was being fooled by this darn thing. And so a friend of mine says, we need to make this into something pretty. So we created...
You were still using the cardboard box.
We were using the cardboard box at the time. So I made it into a nice little wooden box as a prototype. I took it to the Magic Castle swap meet. I did it that afternoon, and I had like 12 orders, and I didn't even have a box to sell.
Okay.
And guys were, as soon as that comes out, I want it. And so I had about 25 of these made. I found a manufacturer. I took it to a convention up north. Sold all 25 like the first day.
Uh-huh.
And from then on, it just went insane.
Are you making them yourself now? Or
no, I have them made in New Mexico.
Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I always, in my mind, imagined you had some workshop hidden away like Johnny Gons or something.
You got to have a production house that can put them out.
Yeah. And I was thinking that it was it Cephalojia?
Yeah, people thought Cephalojia, cephalgia.
Yeah.
Had a part in there that was kind of the same
as
the Dean's Box. Now, it didn't come from there because I knew nothing of cephalgia.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't heard about it. There were a few people that were upset and said I should have done my homework and looked around first to see if there's anything like it before I claim it to be mine, even though I gave Paul Curry his dues. And they said, well, it's kind of like Cephalgia. And I said, well, what's Cephalgia? And so not knowing anything about that, I pretty much just came up with the box myself.
Yeah.
And that is the truth.
I understand. Going back in time for some people, again, who may not know you then as well, I think of you also as being like a mentor to Johnny Carson in a way, and teaching him some coins and stuff like that. So let's go back to, of course, Johnny Carson, who was a late-night talk show host for those people who are younger listening to the podcast, who know David Letterman or Fallon, Jimmy Fallon and others, but Carson was the original talk show guy, and you got to be friends with him.
I got lucky. One day I was at Hollywood Magic, and he happened to walk in, and the guys that were there that day say, he never comes in. I don't know how this happened, so here I am behind the bar with Johnny, behind the counter. There's only a few guys there. Doug Malloy was there, and George Tovar and a couple other guys, and there was nobody in the shop. And so here I was standing with Johnny. He showed me a coin trick, and then I showed him a couple of my coin tricks, and his eyes popped. He goes, wow, I never seen anything like that before. And so, well, it was really nice to meet you, and this and that and the other. And Doug Malloy gave him his business card, but I didn't really want to jump on him at the time. I just figured I'd met Johnny Carson, and I'll be
that's
able
enough
to tell my friends, and that's plenty. So then I went back to my barbershop, and Johnny Gaughan came in for a haircut. And Johnny Gaughan says, I told him the story, and John says, you met Johnny and you did magic for him and he liked it. He says, you need to do this. He said, John Shrum is the art director on the Tonight Show. And I know John very well. This is Johnny Gaughan talking.
Right.
And you need to send him a pad. What was he interested in? I said, well, he was interested in a close-up pad. And, you know, I make close-up pads.
Yeah.
So Johnny says, why don't you sit? Johnny Gaughan says, send him a close-up pad. We'll send him a note. I'll get John Shrum to put it on his desk. And you can bypass all the fan letters
and
everybody else. Right. And let's just see what happens. So I made a close-up pad, put a trick inside the box, and I can't remember what that was at the time. They sent it to the Tonight Show. It wouldn't get through. It couldn't get through the gates.
Yeah.
It came back to Johnny Gaughan. John says, you got to tell him what's inside because the security and this and that.
Sense,
so
yeah.
I redid it and put a note and said, this is inside and that's inside. And so about 2.5 weeks later, I get a phone call at home, and it's Johnny. And in the box, I put a note. And I said, you know, if you're ever interested in learning some of those things you saw me do at the magic shop, please feel free to call. And I gave him my number and my business card inside the package. 2.5 weeks later, he calls me at home and says, in fact, he called. My wife wouldn't answer the phone. I was at the lumber yard. She was too scared. She heard Johnny's voice and says, oh, my gosh. And so she just left it on the answering machine. And when I got back, I said, well, I called Johnny. And there he was saying, I'd like to learn some of your coin magic. When can you come over? I ended up coming over to his house and teaching him. He asked me how much I charged per hour. I said, $50, just like I would charge anybody else. I didn't want to charge more just because he was Johnny.
Right.
You know, the word gets around. It's like, so that got it all started. First day I was over there, you know, I taught him Matrix and a few things he'd never seen before. And he just loved coin magic. He was actually pretty good with cards, but he knew not too much about coins. And then that very first night I was at his house, and I probably had gone to his house about maybe a dozen times in the next few years. Every time he'd burn a hole in his close-up pad with his cigarettes, he'd call me to get a new one. So we'd spend 3 or 4 or 5 hours at his house. And the first time I was there, he says, you know what, I'd really like to have you on the Tonight Show. And I just, my blood pressure went up. Sure, I'd love to do
it. So you never even had that in the back of your mind thinking,
No.
You were just thinking, hey, there's a friend and somebody I can teach some magic and it's kind of neat.
I just figured, hey,
not a celebrity,
the
end game.
I didn't want to be on the show.
Okay.
It was too scary. You know, and when he asked me to be on, I was a nervous wreck for the next month or so. Anyway, it took 3 or 4 years after that before he was just about to go off the air, and he said, well, when are you ready? Give me 6 or 7 minutes. I said, I'm ready. I just said it because I knew if I didn't, I'd never.
You'd never do it, right?
And so within a few days, Jim McCauley, who was his guy at the office, called me and said, how about Thanksgiving night? I went, okay. And that was 2 weeks later, and I couldn't sleep or eat or breathe. I practiced my act and thought, oh, my gosh, I can't do this. But I eventually went on, and it was the scariest moment of my life, but probably one of the neatest things that ever happened.
And you've done that a couple times after that, too, didn't you?
No, only once.
Just the once,
No, because he went off the air after that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Only a couple of guys went on, Brian Gillis and a couple others, and then he quit in 93 or something.
Yeah, Paul Gardner, I think.
Paul Gardner. In fact, Paul and I went over to his house once together.
Oh, you did, because he told me the story one time when he first went over. Paul had gone to there. He told the... the guy, I guess, the taxi driver, you know, gave him directions. He said, well, you know whose house this is? He said, yeah, this is the right address. And he drove up, and he said, you know, Johnny had come out in his tennis shorts and was helping him with stuff out of the taxi, and he didn't realize that was him at first, even.
Oh, really?
But, yeah.
Yeah, because you had to go through the gate, and there was a guard at the gate. And so Johnny must have known he was coming.
Yes, that's what he said.
But one day we both went together and had a great time. So I got to take a few pictures of Paul and Johnny.
That's cool.
And then he got to take a few pictures of me and Johnny.
Yeah.
And usually his wife would, but I didn't. I felt funny asking for pictures. But my wife says, you better
do
some
it now.
Pictures.
Yeah. So. Very cool. Well, good. Thank you very much. I appreciate some of the backstory on there. And so what are some of your suggestions for young magicians who might be getting started in magic?
Well, just keep buying DVDs.
I seem to be doing that.
You know, in the old days, they used to read and really absorb what the magician was thinking, but nowadays it seems like you can get a quick fix with a DVD. The young magicians are all finger flingers now, it seems like. They love the Dan and Dave stuff.
Yep, sure.
And, you know, I teach a lot of junior magicians, and I try to make sure that they are very clear when they present their magic. And if they have a sense of humor, great. But if not, make sure the audience knows what you're doing. And don't go too fast. And make sure that they understand the effect. That's all I would really teach.
Yeah.
And make sure that somebody follows.
And that they can explain it easily. So that way that they're not having to say, well, he did this, and then he counted down a certain number.
Well, yeah, it'd be nice to have a spectator leave and remember what the procedure was.
Yeah.
And... of course, when you do a show, you're doing about 8 or 9 effects, so you know you want to make sure that they go away with something they'll remember.
Well, as Vernon would say also, the magic shouldn't be confusing.
Confusion is not magic.
Confusion is not magic.
Yeah,
That's right.
In fact, I used to cut the professor's hair the last 5 or 6 years before he passed.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I got a swatch of his hair here.
Oh.
I got an envelope full of his hair, and then I started collecting hair from all the magicians who had come through here. So I got a whole stack of...
Well, you certainly got a lot of pictures. Do you have their hair attached to the backs of the pictures?
I was going to do something like that, but I haven't done it yet.
Well, you still got time. You're a young man.
Yeah, thanks.
You got a ways to go.
Yeah,
the name of my podcast, again, is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is your magic word? It may not be like abracadabra. It could be just a life credo, something you live by. You know, your...
Jesus Christ.
That is a great... Thank you. Okay, that was good. That was Dean Dill.
That's in context.
Of? Oh, yes, I understand.
Yeah.
Of course. Thank you very much.
He's my Lord. Okay.
And our Savior. Yeah. Thank you very much. That was Dean Dill. And for now, this is Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells from the Magic Castle in Hollywood, California, for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And this evening, here at the castle, my very special guests are Nani and Mark Wilson. Hello, guys.
Hi. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Very good to see you guys here then as well. And I just happened to come in on Monday. This is Wednesday night. And Monday, I noticed that you guys were setting up for a class. Can you tell me something a little bit about the class? I got picked up a brochure on this also here. I think it was telling you something about this was for the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Is that right?
That's what this is.
Okay.
It's for beginners, really. So we teach them. It's a 4-week long, 2 hours, hour and a half for each class.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach them simple tricks that they can learn and do and hopefully become interested in magic.
So these types of tricks, are they mathematical in nature or sleight of hand? Or both?
It's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, very little sleight of hand. And very little mathematics as well. They're almost self-working tricks, but not quite.
Yeah, if, I always say if they're self-working tricks, I would set it up, go home, and then come back and collect my check. You know, if it worked by itself, you know, that's the ultimate self-working.
But the one of the main results of this is the thing we discovered in teaching these classes. It's wonderful to be able to teach some magic to the people you're doing it for.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the jumping rubber band is a great example of that because all you need is a rubber band. But if you do the trick for whoever you're doing the trick for, and then you give them a rubber band and you teach them the trick, then they will remember you when they do the trick for their friends. So it's one of the best benefits of not, since they're just starting in magic, you're not going to learn particularly super powerful tricks.
Right.
But they will learn things that will be very interesting and with which they can make friends.
Right. And so it's a good way for not only youth but adults to to learn things.
Well, yes. These are adults for these classes. Mm-hmm. They're all,
all 21 and over.
You have to be 21 and over. It's a Magic Castle.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Because they have the youth program. The junior program is something completely separate from this.
Totally separate. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And they learn much more complicated tricks, really, because they've got the time and the energy and the,
good
and
point.
The intent to do it well.
Well, they have a more open mind, I would think. You know, after a certain number of years, you kind of have, you know, some prejudices, and I'm going to do it this my way and rather than someone else's way.
Well, that's possible, yes.
Well, now, you've been teaching certainly for a long number of years, and one of my early primers was, of course, the Mark Wilson Course on Magic. It's right there by Tarbell in my class. And that you first published that what year?
1975.
Okay.
So that was 75, 85, 95, 05, and 15.
Close to 30 years, yeah.
Yeah, close to 40 years.
40, that's right, sorry.
Yeah.
That's the mathematics.
That's right, yeah. Let's see, I have no new math tricks.
I had no idea when we published it that it would be as popular as it became, because it has now reached it being translated into six languages, French, Spanish, Italian, Chinese, Russian, and of course English, that's six. It's reached over 850,000 copies have been sold throughout the world.
As I recall, it seems like that a while back you also opened a website that you were teaching magic online.
And we're planning on doing that again at some time, but not right now. We're just too busy teaching the classes and everything to do that, yeah.
Because we don't only teach the beginning class. After this, in July, we'll be teaching Magic 3 or more advanced magic classes for brother students.
Now, in those classes, Nani, are those going to be larger tricks, let's say, like stage illusions, mentalism, escapes, or is it still just sleight of hand?
It's still close-up.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Still small tricks, no illusions.
Because I know that with the Mark Wilson Course of Magic, you had it all, and I even built some of those boxes out of refrigerator boxes, you know.
That's the best way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're not going to be teaching those kinds of things then here. There's really some basics and sleight of hand.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay. And this is, look at the card, 6 weeks long?
This is 4 weeks, the one that's going on in June, right.
Mm-hmm. And after this is over, I mean, this podcast will come out after people have, this has already been full.
That'll be the 6 weeks. Course that'll be taught in July, starting the second week in July, going on for 6 weeks, two nights a week. But you only take one night a week. The second night is the same class repeated.
Gotcha. And is this also available for members only, or is it open to the public?
No, it's open to the public, but it's more advanced magic.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that come in order to learn magic to pass the audition test, and we're so happy that the class we repeated. We completed about a month ago, whenever it was, number of those people now are members. So that makes us very happy.
Kind of move them on into
that's what this does, yes. Uh-huh.
Excellent, excellent. Now, you and I had worked with Walter Blaney, you know, in the World Alliance of Magicians, you know, some years ago.
Oh, yeah.
and so I think this is the right way of trying to get people indoctrinated to learn magic properly rather than having secrets revealed. You got any comments on that?
Yeah, we never reveal secrets. On the other hand, as I mentioned to you with the jumping rubber band, just because it's such a great trick to teach. So teaching magic is one of the best things that you can do in order to gain friends and Yeah.
And gain self-confidence as well.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. very true. Yes.
That's what I always thought it was good, not only for youth, but also for older people who are salesmen. You know, I was in the sales force for a long time, and I was the only magician in my industry, basically. And so everybody tells jokes, is what I always said. However, different people will appreciate different types of humor, and some don't appreciate other types, whereas magic is universally accepted and enjoyed by all. And it's a good way to get past the gatekeeper if you're a salesman as well.
That's exactly what Mark says.
Mm-hmm. Here comes Scott. I wonder what he's going to do for us this time.
Right, right.
You know?
They look forward to seeing
you. So they're happy to see you come back.
Sure.
Because you're bringing them a new trick.
And some joy and something, yeah.
That's right.
Right.
And another thing that you can do networking with your magic. If you're doing a magic for the president of whatever, or for anybody, you can offer to do a show for them at their next school carnival, church affair, whatever, and now you become their friend, which will help you accomplish whatever you're trying to accomplish.
And, you know, they feel a little bit special as well because they know a, quote, celebrity, you know, someone who's going to be the entertainer, you know, so they kind of, hey, I know somebody. Well, not, you know, magicians are weird, a few of us, you know, it's a small lot. And so I think we are a very special and unique, you know, group of people. And so, because every time I ask people, how many magicians do you know? Well, there's you, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
So. They become very excited at meeting a magician.
Yes.
And learning just a little bit from them, thinking, well, they're important too.
Let me ask you this question, both of you then. When someone asks you, show me a trick, you know, can you teach me something, is the jumping rubber band your go-to trick?
Yeah, the jumping rubber band is the best example of that that I know. Mm-hmm. There are other tricks. There's the
cork,
corks,
yeah,
you know, or the linking paper clips and
good.
So forth. So
or roll the bill.
Yeah,
yeah,
and roll the bills is a terrific one.
The one
which
comes on top of the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So on mine, I put it on a couple of years ago, and it's pretty good instructions. Most of the instructions that you see on your computer, the online instructions, are some 14-year-old kid who says, "Let me show you a card trick."
Yes.
You know, but these are pretty good instructions. And I've had over 300,000 people that have learned how to roll the bills from what they've seen.
On YouTube. Mm-hmm.
On YouTube.
On YouTube.
And so if people want to find that, what is the website then?
That particular thing is on YouTube.
Okay, so just do a search for Mark Wilson.
Yeah.
Roll the bill.
Mark Wilson.
Yeah, Mark Wilson roll the bill should do it.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So those are, so you wouldn't necessarily teach them a card trick. You would teach them something more like that.
Well,
because most times people would have more access to a rubber band than they would a deck of playing cards.
Well, that's very
true. Or coins.
That's very true. So, because there's no cost involved. Cards, there's a little bit of cost
mm-hmm.
involved. So, yeah, rubber band or a coin or a paper clip is everywhere.
I've always found that is true. We were talking about, you know, the gatekeeper or being a salesman when you're in someone's office. There's always a rubber band, paper clip, you know, something
exactly.
like that. And so that you say, hey, well, let me just borrow something. And I believe magic is something that happens. It's like, it's not that you're giving someone a sandwich, but somebody wants a sandwich and suddenly it appears type
yeah.
of a thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I believe also that, in other words, it's something that they want or they need, and suddenly that is the true magic, you
yeah,
know.
And you can use magic in order to get in to see the man in the corner office that you really need to see in order to sell the
deal. Right.
If you go up to the receptionist, and maybe they've got 10 people around, and you say to the receptionist, have you got a couple of paper clips, and I've got
right.
a dollar bill, and you can show her how to do it.
Right.
When she learns how to do it, she becomes your friend because you've done something for her, and you just might get in before some of the other fellows.
You know, it's funny when you mention the paperclip. Just a few weeks ago at the restaurant where I work, one of the waiters came over and said, I want to show you a trick, because he knew I was obviously a magician, been working on it for 12 years, and he did the paperclip with a bill. And I said, oh, that's really great. You know, I mean, I was building him up and saying, that's great. You need to learn some more stuff. I mean, I was encouraging him and saying, that's
good.
Great.
Absolutely.
You know, rather than saying, let me show you something else better than that and trying to one-up, it's like, you know, step back, let him have his minute, you know.
That's
and,
very important. Yeah. That's
it's very
good.
It's very important that you not be a smart aleck when you
yes.
do magic. That's one of the most important, or perhaps the most important,
mm-hmm.
because people do business with people they like.
Absolutely, Mark. Yes,
and
you
if
got
they
right
like
there.
You, they're much more likely to do the business
you
with
got
you.
It. You got
and
it.
If they don't like you, watch out. right. you're in trouble.
Right. But that's a great icebreaker. You know, they may not like you, but then if you start to do something, I think it's important that you're not doing something that would show up another person. If you start to realize that that alpha male, you know, in the group is the person who is in charge, and you're starting to do something that now they start migrating towards you, and they start to lose the, you know, the, that guy's losing his following, that's when you need to back away and say, well, I'm sure this guy can do something.
I can do this, but you can't, fellow.
Yeah.
Watch this.
Yeah.
No, don't ever do that.
Yeah, yeah. You got to be cautious, I think, and know your audience as well.
Yeah.
You know. So we've been doing this obviously a long number of years, and been traveling around the world. And you know, one of the things always impressed me is that you had been seen by more people in the world after you did that that China special. The first was that part of the cultural exchange or something way back then?
Well, it turned out to be. I had always heard when I was growing up. Magic came from China. Chinese linking ring.
Of course.
Wow. Chinese fukan, so forth.
Jungling Su. Robinson.
So in 1978, I started going to what turned out to be the embassy, the Chinese embassy in Washington, D.C.
That was a mission at that time.
It was called the mission because we didn't have the joint recognition yet between the United States and China. But they turned the mission into the embassy. And I convinced the embassy that we could exchange magic with China. You see, I didn't tell them, we do a lot of magic, you don't. I said, you do magic that you do, and I do magic, Western magic. And so finally, in June of 1980, we got the invitation from the Chinese to bring our illusion show to China. And we went over in October of 1980, was when we were there. And at that time, China was a different country than what it is now.
Sure.
It was, there were no good hotels. They said, we'll put you in the hotel here.
There were no Western hotels.
Yeah, nothing like that. No Western food.
So you stay in someone's home? Or?
No, we stayed in
Chinese
a hotel.
Chinese hotels.
Oh, there were, but nothing like what we're used to.
Chinese hotels with a wooden bed and a thin mattress that was a couple layers of...
no spring mattress.
No. No rugs on the floor, a little throw rug maybe next to the bed. Mm-hmm. Very tiny towels in the bathroom. They just didn't have the money and were much more primitive. They had not been around the Western world in so many years.
But they were very friendly.
Wonderful
the people were wonderful. And they would all say, we're sorry about the hotel and accommodations and everything for you, but we're so happy that you're here. And we were happy to be there. We were carrying 20 people and 5,000 pounds of props to do our illusion show. And we selected the people because we thought we must get people that the Chinese will accept, and we don't want any roustabouts or anybody in our cast.
Mm-hmm.
So we had good people, and most of them have turned out to be very wonderful now, I can say 20 or 30 years later.
That's wonderful.
And we were careful on the costuming that we used there.
Well, I hadn't thought about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can't show any legs or whatever kind of.
Well, you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
We did. But we had full skirts. But we also had leotards, but they were long sleeve leotards.
Oh,
they weren't, you know, low cut.
Sure.
We were just, every costume, every detail, everything we did was well thought out.
Did it have to get approved or something by the embassy beforehand?
No.
Or just something you guys thought of?
It was disapproved.
Okay.
Yeah, we were just careful, and I guess that was the right thing to do.
Right.
But I, being blonde, was the only blonde in China.
Wow.
Yes. The other two girls we brought...
You must have people follow you all over.
One was a redhead and one was a brunette. We did that deliberately because we wanted a mixture
diversity of
America.
Mm-hmm.
And I wore high-heeled boots. It was October. It was getting very, very cold. And a suede coat. Well, that wasn't in China, so I was like, I felt very unique among them, but they were very friendly.
Yeah.
They would come and look at me and smile, and I'd smile back and, you know, be very open with them. They were just wonderful people.
We opened in Beijing, at a very nice theater in Beijing, a very old theater, because all they had were old theaters, as you could realize.
They weren't building anything new.
Because the communists had been around for 32 years, so they had built nothing. And the electricity... They had a big switch that they would pull up from the bottom and one of these clip-on things.
Yeah, sure.
And the lights would go on. And they had no intercom between the stage and the guys in the spotlights.
He's hollering
at the other,
And in the curtains, to hang the curtains on stage, they had bars across the top of the stage, and we tied the curtains up on the bars. Well, I didn't, but I mean, our crew did, yeah.
And you had the same stage throughout, or did you travel around the country?
Oh, we traveled all around the country.
Okay.
Different theaters.
Yeah.
Spittoons in every theater.
Spittoons.
All over the place. Oh,
wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Beijing, Nanjing, Wuxi, and Shanghai.
And you learned some...
No, but my son did.
I was going to say that your son continued to travel, I think, didn't he? And sponsored the Chinese acrobats?
Michael, our son, our older son, has made, when he was going there all the time, he's made over 100 trips from USA to mainland China.
Mm-hmm.
And he speaks Mandarin, of course. Mm-hmm. He went to the Peking University, Beida.
After our trip.
Right.
After he had been there.
He was impressed.
That's what he wanted to do. So he came back here and got a double master's, one in international trade and one in Chinese language.
Wow.
And in 3 years he learned fluent. He was fluent in magic. Mm-hmm. Fluent in magic.
In Mandarin.
In Mandarin. And writing it too.
Mm-hmm.
And so he one of those 3 years he spent in China at Beidai University.
Yeah. Wow. Now, going back just a little bit, how did you approach the Chinese government? I mean, was it through the U.S. Embassy in Washington, D.C., or through contacts you had, or you just made a phone call, a fax, or...
We were doing shows.
We were doing shows for Anheuser-Busch
at the time.
Like
we were like in Busch Gardens.
Yeah.
And I spoke to the Busch people, and they said, well, let me set up a man for you. So they called, or they wrote a letter or whatever, to the gentleman that I saw at the embassy in Washington, D.C., and I told him what we wanted to do. And very interestingly, when I was at the embassy, I always did a few small tricks, like the color-changing knife, which I have in my pocket still. Since I was 12 years old, I've been carrying a different color-changing knife around. And that impressed them. And although I'm sure they, I said the right things, but it was the pocket magic, the small magic tricks I did for them that really got them intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
And they said to me at one time, would you mind coming back, because I made many trips to Washington, D.C., out of my own pocket. And they said, would you come back and do a show for us sometime? Maybe you could bring a few tricks. And so I said, yes, I would. And then I got my suitcase loaded with magic on the next trip. And then they said, okay. And now at this embassy, which it was now, they brought down, there were about 100 people there. And I'd only met maybe 10 at the top. But many of them were in uniform because they came from the floor wherever they kept the Chinese army. And they came down and they watched as well. So it was really the magic that did the job, not
right.
me.
Right, that opened the door, just like we were talking about earlier.
That's
exactly it.
But Mark did this all alone. He was there. He was the only person who went. He didn't have anybody going with him. I was back here, and all the people. Mike went with him on a couple of trips.
Later on, after
Mark had done all the introductions and become a very good salesman, as Mark is.
And so after they, enjoyed the magic, at some point they said, let's do a TV special, or was that something that you had pushed for?
No. The TV special, they didn't even know about TV specials.
Okay.
They didn't know about TV.
So when we were over there, I was surprised to see that, we opened in Beijing, and then at the first night, there were television cameras around, and it was just local.
Yeah.
Because television was only on for a few hours every day in Beijing, and another station in Shanghai, and so forth. So they would tape it themselves. And later on, I think maybe they put it all together, and they made a special up from that material, which was shot at our show.
When they put that together, that was put together by the Chinese government then, or did you?
Everything was put together by...
Okay.
That had nothing to do with any of the Chinese specials we showed here.
That's what I meant.
No, we brought our own cameras.
That's what I was thinking, because they look pretty professional. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we brought our own camera crew, director. We had a terrific guy.
We had five people who were only to videotape and audio tape it.
Yeah.
And you still obviously keep in contact, I'm sure, with some of your friends from there.
Yeah.
Did you teach some magicians over there that have now carried on?
Yes. You see, the magicians had been out of touch with the rest of the world.
Because of the communism.
As China was, because mm-hmm. of the Iron Curtain, or the Bamboo
sure.
Curtain, as they call
Remember
it.
Remember that?
So the magicians in China at that time, for 32 years, had never been outside of China.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't know what was going on. They didn't have any playing cards that amounted to anything.
Just couldn't afford it, I guess, either.
Yeah, well, they weren't available.
Oh, okay.
Nothing
and
was
they
available.
Weren't allowed.
Hmm.
They weren't allowed to travel.
No magic tricks were available. They couldn't even build any new because they were busy digging and working in communes.
Hmm.
So when we opened in Beijing, and they said, we have a magic get-together for you for the Chinese magicians. Fine. So one night, they had at the hotel, the Chinese magicians came from throughout China to see our show and to meet us and to learn what we could
yeah.
teach them and vice versa. The problem was that the Chinese magic that I'd really been wanting to see was not anything new or developed. Nothing had developed in the 32 years.
Wow.
They were doing the same tricks that they did. I mean, the dollhouse was a big trick.
Yeah.
It was the, yeah.
Were there street magicians, I assume, there? No, nothing like that?
No. Okay. They couldn't. They were all communists.
All banned.
They didn't do anything freely. Mm-hmm. They were not allowed to do anything.
Because I think about, you know, people
because
in
Because the professors
India.
Were all taken away from the universities. No one was allowed to speak English. Everybody suddenly... who had maybe learned a little English, mm-hmm. totally forgot it.
Which is why magic played so well over there, I guess, because you were doing the illusions to
magic
music.
Magic is universal.
Right.
Magic is international.
Yeah.
And it works anywhere. And although we were usually the first group of ugly Americans that most everybody over there had ever seen in their
yeah.
whole life,
yeah.
they loved the magic. And as soon as I would do the magic, they would be our friends. And magic was just a terrific introduction, and now we've ended up, we have a number of friends in China, and we have some mm-hmm. friends over here
right.
that have come from China and now live in the United States.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it was so primitive that when we would, between shows we have a day off or something, you'd walk around the city. I was walking around, I was taking Polaroid pictures, if you remember Polaroid
sure,
cameras.
Yes, I do. yeah.
And there was a lady standing in a doorway with two little girls, and I want to take a picture of her, and she said, no, no. And she grabbed her children and ran back in the house.
Because
she was
her
very
soul
frightened
or
of it.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't speak the language, but I pointed to her. She pushed the children behind her. I pointed to the camera and said, I'll give you the picture.
Yeah.
And when I took a picture of someone else,
yeah.
and then I gave it to her, and I said, now can I take a picture of you with your children? I will give it to you.
Yeah.
Then it was okay. Then she was a friend. But she was frightened of it before.
Yes.
She had never been exposed to that.
Right. Wow.
Well, that's how far behind they
yeah,
were.
Yeah, with something that we would take for granted.
Yeah.
Easily
mm-hmm.
like that.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Interesting. Well, how far everything has come, you know,
oh,
certainly.
Yeah. Oh, how different it is.
That's true. That's
how quickly.
True. Oh, golly, yes. You know, of course, we were just talking about YouTube and everything else, and of course, the internet and everything else that they're doing. And,
yeah.
and golly, yeah, things have
We
have
couldn't
progressed.
Even make phone calls. In the hotels, we would have to go down to the desk and make a reservation with the hotel desk to make a phone call. There were no phones in your rooms.
Hmm. They would make a call, and then they would let you know.
We would come down to the lobby and meet.
At a certain time.
And, of course, no television in the room, nothing
right.
like that.
Well, when you talk about televisions earlier with a television station and only a few hours a day, I would think that there were only a handful of people in China
right.
who even had televisions.
Right. They would give the television set or the whatever, allow the television set in the commune, and then several hundred people could watch the same set.
Mm-hmm.
Small set.
Oh, okay. Wow.
We all get together to watch.
Little black and white,
yeah.
Sylvania over there. Well, wonder if they made TVs over there then. They weren't probably making the components, at that point.
No
Interesting.
Idea.
Well, listen, I know that you're going to still have to get ready because there are more things we could certainly talk about. I'd love to talk about, you know, the magic land of Alakazam, and I know the listeners would like to hear about that, and that's a whole lecture that
it would
take.
Right.
And I've heard it's
available for lectures.
Yes, okay, well, there you go. Still traveling and doing some lectures. But if people want to get in touch with you and find out more information, then go to, what's the website?
MarkWilsonMagic.com.
MarkWilsonMagic.com is the best way to try to get hold of you. Okay? And follow me that. Okay. Now, to wrap up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And
I was going to ask you that.
Yes. And so my question, I always end by asking my guests of what their magic word is. It wouldn't be necessarily abracadabra. It could be a credo, something you live life by. What is yours?
Well, it could be Alakazam.
That's what I was expecting. It would have to
with
be.
With two L's. Alakazam with two L's.
It's an interesting story. Quick, go ahead and explain.
Don't mark two.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when we were putting out, it's a long story.
Yeah.
Make it quick.
When we were putting the show together, I realized that if we spelled Alakazam with two L's, the K would come in the middle, and we
Kellogg's
were sponsored
K.
by mm-hmm. Kellogg's, so that was the reason that we spelled Alakazam with two L's.
So K was featured as your sponsor
in the center of the
right exactly
of the word.
Well, great, Mark, Nani, thank you guys very much. I appreciate you taking some time to talk with us. I'm sure the listeners have got a lot out of this as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry we didn't have anything to talk about. We did the best.
Time flies when you're having fun. That's always the truth.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Nani. Thank you, Mark. And for now, this is Scotty out. Well, as we are continuing our interviews here at the Magic Castle, I am now with a good friend, Paul Green. Good evening, Paul. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, Scott. Thanks for asking me to do this.
I appreciate you being available, because I know you've been doing some magic shows in between. So you're like one of the house magicians, a resident magician here, I guess, the castle
kind
of thing.
Well, you know, when I'm here, I like to do a show or two. It keeps my hands busy.
Now, how does that work? I mean, I hear about, non-paid members that come and perform in different places. And they call these guys to come in. They just, I guess, like to have roaming magicians at the castle.
No, they have the Hat and Hair Pub downstairs is manned on the weekends, and volunteers come and just have a great time. And then there are a number of impromptu areas here at the castle, and anybody that really wants to work can work at that time.
Okay. Well, I was talking with another friend, Alfonso, was saying that he was, coming in at the last minute. They called, say, hey, can you come on over? And so that's why I thought, well, maybe they just have
they have a number of locals that are close by,
mm-hmm.
and they can call it at the drop of a hat. I'm a little bit farther away from the Magic Castle, so I'm not one of those people that comes in. I come in when I can and enjoy myself.
Now, are you roving about, or do you have like this particular area, like we were sitting here right next to the parlor in this table area?
This is right next to the parlor, of Prestidigita. It's the parlor table.
The parlor,
yeah,
near the palace.
And on the weekends, Bill Jocelyn has domain over this table, and he was a member of the Rat Pack, and people love the stories about Frank Sinatra and the things that he does. And he's
seriously, that Rat Pack?
That Rat Pack.
Wait a minute. Tell me something. Tell me a little more about that.
Bill, when he was younger, he's now in his 80s.
Bill
Jocelyn.
Jocelyn, okay.
And he was a member of the Rat Pack, probably the unknown Rat Pack.
Yeah.
But he was a dancer, and he was a fighter, If you get a chance, he'll tell you the story about Angie Dickinson, and Angie Dickinson loved him, and she was a female member of the Rat Pack.
And Shirley MacLaine too, as I recall.
And Frank loved Bill, and Bill's always done magic, and he's very personable.
Yeah,
very very personable.
Close up type magic, I guess.
Very
and
much so.
He did stuff for Frank and Dean and Sammy and all
the
those
boys,
guys.
That's
wow.
Right.
So did he travel with them actually, or is he just
I think it was a Vegas situation. Might have been in New York as well. I'm not really 100% positive.
Because whenever I think of the Rat Pack and see pictures, obviously it's just, the few guys. The one who seems to be more unknown is Joey Bishop,
Yeah, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So he comes and performs magic still. He's in his 80s then.
Yeah.
He must have been a pretty young fellow then.
I would imagine.
The Rat Pack at that point.
Back when. So.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd like to talk with him and find out how I actually got associated with him, to begin with.
Well, the Magic Castle is filled with people that have great stories.
Oh, everybody does. That's why I wanted to bring us along with me and kind of chat with people. So tell me your story. You've been hanging out here for a long number of years.
Well, I've been performing here for 40 years, which is an awfully long time.
Yeah, Singing House only been open for 50.
That's right. That's right. And I started, I was actually the youngest performer to ever be here on an ongoing basis. This is many, many years before the juniors group. And I would hate to have to audition to be a junior today.
Goodness.
They are awesomely talented.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite story that, and I've told this before, but my favorite story is Charlie Miller, and my wife and I are coming up on our 40th wedding anniversary. But before we were married, we came to the Magic Castle about 2 or 3 days before we were to be married, and saw Charlie working downstairs in the museum. Back then, it was the Magic Cellar, and he loved both me and my wife. My wife's name is Suzanne. And at the end of the show, we went in to talk to him in the dressing room. And he looked at me and he said, "Paul, go upstairs. I need to talk to Suzanne all by ourselves."
Yeah, privately.
And about 25 minutes later, they walk upstairs and they both have grins on their faces.
Yeah.
I won't tell you the kind of grins, but it's that kind of grin.
Okay.
And for over 25 years, my wife would not share the conversation that they had had during that night. And then I guess it was probably on our 25th wedding anniversary. I said to her, "You know, I've always wanted to know what you and Charlie talked about." And she said, "Well, we've been married 25 years. I guess it's time." And she sat down with Charlie, and Charlie had told her that I was the kind of person that loved magic, and that I would have always loved magic more than I would love her.
Wow.
And because he loved both of us, he didn't want either of us to hurt each other's feelings or anything like that. And he just wanted to warn Suzanne that I was a magician in my heart and in my soul. Things have changed. I'm still a magician. I'll let you decide where. But that story stuck with me for an awfully long time, and it means a lot to me because, you know, we as magicians have to remember that we're involved in families as well.
True.
So families are important.
That's right, because in the end, that's pretty much all that you have, your legacy, your family, your children, and you grandchildren, and on from there.
You can't do a double lift. You can't classic palm a coin. What are you going to do? You have to depend upon your family.
You know, I often think about that from the standpoint that you have children who will talk about, "Oh, Grandpa used to be a magician," you know, but at some point, they forget about what you did. I don't know what my great-great-grandfather did, you know, for an example, as a profession, you know, or even, let alone a hobby, you know.
Right.
But the point is that I'm here today because of him. Physically, I would not be here,
right,
you know.
Precisely.
And so I think that's why that's important to recognize that certainly that legacy is the procreation, I guess, you know.
Well, family,
love,
family
passed down, because
family is important. And then the other aspect that you and I have, Scott, is that we are very lucky because we have the support of our families, of our spouses,
and loving wives, yeah.
And you know, it's like they allow us to perform. Thank heavens, we perform as well as we do, and we've taken them all over the world with us.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know,
that's just a perk.
That's right. Well, I remember when I went to my father-in-law, my prospective father-in-law at the time, and it was, "What do you do for a living, young man?" "You do what? You're a what?" And then the trip,
no, really, what do you do for a full-time
yeah,
job?
Yeah, and then "Suzanne, why don't you take a trip to Europe, all expenses paid, and if you still love the guy, you know."
Yeah.
So it's that kind of talk and that kind of fun and games.
Right. Now, the Magic Castle has been here for, obviously, this is its 50th year.
And
that's
right.
That, I know they had just a big celebration a few months ago, and it was about a year ago, or last fall, I guess, whenever they had the fire.
That's right.
And so tell me something about how it's evolved, because it seems to me that there have been a lot of changes. I've not performed here since 97, and I know they had the Peller Theater downstairs and a whole bunch of things.
Well, we've added a number of different performing areas. The Peller down in the inner circle is one area, mm-hmm, named after Trini Peller's husband. And then we have the classroom area where the classes are given, but then on the weekends...
I was just talking to Mark and Nani.
Right, and that's another impromptu area.
Mm-hmm.
The actual physical Magic Castle hasn't changed all that much, although we've got new carpeting and things that, you know, you had to replace after the fire anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But we're structurally in the sense that there isn't much that we can do to the building. So we're kind of stuck that way.
We're kind of landlocked in a way.
Yeah, in essence, we really can't change too much.
You also need the parking facility over there.
That's right.
Have they ever talked about making a parking garage?
You know, that's something that I don't think will ever happen here.
Is it just because of
I think it's because the property really doesn't belong to the academy.
Right, so they can't build a certain structure.
Right, you know, the exterior of the Magic Castle and the... parking structures and everything else is owned by our landlords, which own the restaurant. They own the entire block of property, whereas we, in essence, own from the paint on the walls in.
Yeah.
And that belongs to the Academy.
Okay.
So...
tell me about the separation between the Academy and the Magic Castle. They're two organizations.
I won't even go that far, although they are, because the Magic Castle is an entity that's run with bars and a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And the structure itself, the Academy of Magical Arts, is the lifeblood of that place. It's the magicians and the people that love magic that want to be part of the Academy. And it's the vision to make magic a performing live art, and that's what we do every night. We're very lucky to have a clubhouse, the Magic Castle. I think that if the Magic Castle didn't exist, the Academy would be just like any other magic club that meets in the church basement.
Mm-hmm.
So we're extremely lucky, and we have magicians from all over the world that come here and perform. It's very prestigious to do so. And then I think that over the 50 years, most people say, I'm a member of the Magic Castle, instead of saying, I'm a member of the Academy.
Right, I got it. Yeah, this is a prestigious place that I recall when I was here. In one of the occasions I performed, there was a couple from England, retired pensioners, I guess, from England, and they said that they had been using their life savings to come to America, and one of his lifelong dreams was to come to Magic Castle. And I'm sure that story is told over and over.
I'm pretty sure it's on the bucket list of a lot of people.
A lot of people.
You know, it's still difficult to get into. There's a certain exclusivity that... you know, works to a certain level.
Yeah.
Not everybody that wants to come in can come in.
Right. And, well, in fact, I saw it just as I was coming in to perform here this evening. The valet was turning someone away at the door, you know, saying, well, this is a private club. You just can't drive up and get in.
And in addition to that, we're so successful now that there are times when even our members can't come in.
Really?
And,
so exclusive, you know, even the members can't get in.
Yeah, what happens is that, you know, that the place is limited in the number of people that we can have in here.
Yeah.
And there's no parking spaces, there's no real room, and, you know, we're very cognizant, obviously, of fire codes and things like that now.
Yeah, even more so sensitive, I'd say, now.
Yeah, I would say so.
After that one. And so, what are the long-term plans?
That's a question that I can't answer.
Yeah.
I guess you'd have to ask the board of directors.
Okay.
I think it's interesting that we have a board of directors that handles the business aspect of the Magic Castle and the Academy, and then we have our board of trustees, which handles everything that is magical that happens here.
Good. Well, now, Paul, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is your magic word? It could be a credo, something you live by, you know, a life...
Honestly, Scott, my phrase is to enjoy the search. And I mean that in a number of different ways. For example, if I'm going to add a new trick or routine to my repertoire, I will research and I will find everything out about all the different methods that have been used, and then I cull all of the great things and distill it into what I'm going to use. So enjoying the search is looking for everything that's available. As far as life, enjoy the search. It means that we're never finished.
Sure.
Just to keep...
Continue to work.
There's always another hill to go to look, you know, climb to the top and look on the other
side.
Don't
be satisfied.
Well...
you can be satisfied, but...
But there's always something
continue
more.
The search.
That's right.
That makes sense. Very good practical advice over there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Paul Green. I thank you for your friendship and also for being part of the podcast.
My pleasure, Scott. I've known you a long time, and it's always a pleasure to cross paths with you.
Indeed, my friend. So... that was Paul Green, and for the Magic Word, podcast.com, this is Scotty out. All right, well, I've got a little bit of time here, and I'm up by in the close-up room over in Di Vernon's corner, and I've still got a little bit of time for my show, but I'm here with Howard Hamburg, and we were talking about, speaking of Vernon, of some interesting stories about Vernon and Larry Jennings, some of the guys. So go ahead, Howard. Tell us what you're about to say there.
Well, when the original table was over in the other corner.
Right.
Before
this
they
is
had
early, the
Blackstone
patio.
Right. And so I'm sitting there with the professor and Larry Jennings and Charlie Miller, and the line for the close-up room used to go around the corner,
sure,
behind the professor's chair.
Right.
His settee.
The wall there, right.
Yeah. And there used to be, not a door there, right?
Yeah.
And the professor was talking to three women. They were friends of his, and he turned to me and he says, "How are?" I'll explain that later. He says, "How are?" He says, "Would you mind doing something for my friends while they're waiting?" So I stood up, and I had select a card to two people, and I asked one person the name of their card after they were all returned and shuffled, and I reached in my pocket, and I took out the card, and I gave it to her, and I said, the second lady, I cut my hands together, like I'm holding the deck, and I said, "What was the name of your card?" And she told me, I said, "Don't take your eyes off the deck," and opened it up, and just the card was, was there. And they loved it, and I sat down, the professor thanked me, and Larry was sitting there with his beer, and he says, "That's the worst effing thing I ever saw in my life." He said, "You should have done a top cover pass for God almighty, what kind of stuff?" So Charlie said, "You know, Howard's a friend of ours, a friend of yours. You shouldn't demean him like that. If you have something constructive to show him, but don't embarrass him like you're doing." He said, "I'll show him." So he gets up. He's standing 3 feet away from us with his back to us.
Yeah.
And he's doing the same damn trick, Scott, for the women. And now,
but not letting you guys see what he's
doing.
No,
but
yeah.
the professor, he was the biggest instigator of rifts and trouble here. He says, "That's terrible what he called you. That's terrible." He says, "He's using redback riders just like you are. Maybe you can think of something." So I stood up, and I was 2 feet behind Larry. When Larry went to put the deck into his pocket to swing it, in the effect, I took my cards and I threw them between his legs. Now they're all over the floor in front of him. He thinks he missed his damn pocket.
And it's on the floor, yeah.
He sees cards all over. So he steps across them and he goes up the stairs. You can hear him, "I don't need this crap, And I get back to the...
He didn't pick him up.
No. He was really upset, that he missed his pocket. So now I go back to the table and Vernon's sitting there and Vernon says, "I suggest you go home because when he finds the deck in his pocket, he's going to be really pissed." Oh my God! Yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah, I could tell you. I'd tell you another story if you got time for
it. Sure. That's why we're here. I want to hear some good stories about the old man.
This is a professor. We're down in the Hat and Hair. Now, a professor, I can't show you, was sitting here. And to his left was Larry Jennings. To his right was Michael Skinner. To his right was Johnny Thompson. And then Charlie Miller, Ray Grismer, and myself. And there was a big crowd of people, because in those days when you took cards out, you got a big crowd of people,
sure,
around you. And Larry had just done a matrix effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the professor says, "Larry, let me borrow one of those silver dollars." So Larry pushed it over on the table, and the professor picked it up with his right hand, and he's holding in his hand with the back of his hand towards all of us, and he's reading the date. He says, 1880. He says, "Michael," he says, "come over here, tell me, what's the last number?" And so Skinner starts to come over, and the professor leaned back and said, "Oh, it's a 2. 1882, that's the year Susan B. Anthony was born in Rochester, New York. Women's suffrage, and they started the annex for the Wall Street, the second annex." And he's giving us a history on 1882. He's into this thing for about a minute and a half. And he says, there's a D after the date, 1890, D, what's the D mean? And Johnny says, "Well, it's the Denver Mint. They put the D there." He says, "Mine's 1894. And he's there. He says, "Not as nice as this one." He's looking at it. He says, "Mine's got SF. I never understood that." And I said, "San Francisco, professor, the San Francisco Mint." Scott, he's into this thing for 3.5 minutes.
And what's Skinner doing over there?
They're all just listening to him. Now he takes the coin and he puts it in his left hand, snaps his hands together, the coin's gone. And he gets up and he walks up to the library where we play cards.
Yeah.
So I see the professor, and he says, "Here, give this back to Larry, the nice silver dollar." I said, "Professor, I was watching it like a hawk. I never saw you go out with the coin." He says, "I never had it."
Yeah.
When he picked it up, he just lapped it. You know, a slidini thing, right?
Yeah.
He just lapped it and talked about a coin in
for
his
three
hand
minutes.
For 3 minutes. And Skinner said he saw the coin. He looked at this coin. We all believed he had the coin in his hand.
Yeah.
He talked for 3.5 minutes about a coin he never had in his hand.
Wow. Now that is a funny story.
Here's Ray Grismer. It had rained at the castle. It had rained at the castle, okay? And the rain had stopped. The rain had stopped. And Ray Grismer was one of my best friends, and professor. He taught the professor how to play piano, and the professor taught him magic.
But, yeah.
So Ray was in the bathroom. I'm outside with the professor, and we've done this 100 times. We're going to go to his apartment, right down the driveway across the street to his apartment.
Sure.
And so the professor took out his cards, and he said, "Go ahead."
Like this. Yeah.
He says, "Go ahead and select a card." And as I looked at the nine of spades, for example, Ray walked out of the from the bathroom out the front door.
Yeah.
And I showed Ray the nine of spades. So the professor put it back in the deck, and there was a little shift involved here. And he says, "Give me a number between 5 and 25. And I said, 12. He says, "Let's walk now." And you can see he's doing like he used to do this, which won't appear, but he's like, "What? What?"
Babbling the deck a little bit. Yeah,
running the scale and all that.
Yeah.
So he goes, 1, 2, 3. We're walking down the driveway. 4, 5, 6. On 7, his left leg slips on the wet driveway.
Yep.
Grismer grabs his left arm. I missed his right arm. He falls on his back. Now, he's in his 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I yell out to the valet attendants, "We need help." Hey, professor looks up and says, "Just pick me up. Just pick me." I said, "Professor, you could have a broken bone. I don't want to move you." He says, "Damn it all. You and Ray pick me up." So I looked at Ray. Ray looked at me. Ray picks his left arm. I took his right arm. I wouldn't look. I was afraid to look. We lifted him up. He gets up. And he brushes off his hands.
Yeah.
Brushed off his jacket. He says, "Come on. The light's green." And he took 2 steps forward. And I'm not embellishing this.
Yeah.
This is what we heard. 8, 9.
Pick up right where he left off.
Fell on 7 and just
hard, missed a step.
I could tell you more later.
We got time for a little bit. Let me introduce you first of all, Ken Dumb. Ken just walked over. Ken,
hey,
good to see you.
Good to see you.
Glad that you're making it.
Yeah,
so
man,
I'm have
great.
You. I'm going to be at my 10 o'clock show, so I have you as my guest. Both of you guys are going to
have
you
in. Great.
Yeah.
One more guy.
You got another guest here? That's fine.
Here, shovel those up.
Going to do a trick.
Well, I'm going to try.
Okay.
Give him a cut.
So we'll describe what's happening over here. He's Ken's shuffling up the card. Okay.
And he cut them.
And give him a cut. No, and he cut them. Okay.
Yeah, I take them back. I said, "I'm not going to change your shuffle or your cut. I'm just going to merely riffle these cards. And all I want you to do is be kind enough to say stop."
Sure.
You ready?
Stop.
See it?
Yep.
What is it?
No?
Yeah.
3 hearts.
It's the T-H-E.
And now you're just taking the cards and counting your face up.
It's red. T-H. R-E-D. It's a 3. T-H-R-E-E. And you said it was hearts. H-E-A-R-T-S. Missed it. Take the 2 of diamonds and do one of the... Oh, here. Take it again.
That trick can't be explained.
No, you know, I'll tell you, not making excuses. This light is so shiny to me that I can't see the depth of the cards.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to try to do it. Shuffle, cut. Maybe I'll look this way. So as I riffle the card, just say stop, please.
Stop.
Got it?
Got it.
What is it?
10 hearts.
Take the deck. Spell the face up on the table.
T-H-E.
It's a red card. Spell red.
R-E-D.
It's a 10. Spell 10.
T-E-N.
Of.
Of. O-F.
And it's a heart.
Heart.
Go ahead.
H-E-A-R-T.
S.
Yes, there it is. Ten Hearts.
Sweet. There you go.
Amazing farmer.
Very cool.
You're welcome. Yeah,
yeah,
but see, if I look in here, I can't see depth. This is all pure estimation. This
interesting.
And but when I look at it, I'm blinded.
While we've got this running, tell me at least another story. What are your best favorite stories about Guy Vernon?
Oh God, there's so many of them. I don't even know where to start.
One comes to mind.
I'll tell you what. I'll share a story about my friend Tony Giorgio.
Yeah, hey, Tony's good.
Tony was one of my best friends for 53 years. One evening, it was on a Wednesday, we were at the end of the bar,
okay,
and I was to Tony Giorgio's left. And he was entertaining some women who were in the motion picture industry.
Okay.
And he's doing card tricks for them. They've seen 40 tricks. So taking them out of his mouth and how he used to do that and all, wasn't impressive to them. So I whispered into Tony's left ear, I said, go south with the card. So he shuffled, had her sign a card, dropped his left hand down, and I took the card from him.
Okay.
And he's talking with him, and I walked over to the woman's room, which is out of sight of the bar here, past the stairs. I knocked on the door. I said, janitorial, and no one responded. So I went in, and I put her sign card in the middle stall on the toilet seat. I come back. I'm to his left. I said, women's room, toilet seat. Now, Tony knows we would double-cross each other all the time, but in this case, I wouldn't do it. So he says, your card is gone. And he says, it'll appear in any room in the castle you'd like. For instance, the library, the kitchen, the women's room, name one. And, of course, she took the women's room. She's safe with that. He said, go. She said, go where? To the women's room. She comes out screaming, Scott, shaking, holding her signed card. He never left the bar.
Right.
Segway. About a year and a quarter, a year and a half goes by, and Tony and I are sitting there. Now, he didn't get along that well with Jennings, and Jennings was sitting about six stools from us.
Yeah.
And this member, a magician member, comes up to Tony and says, Mr. Giorgio, this is my fiance. She's never been here. I would love and appreciate if you could do something for her. Would you please? I'd be honored. And Tony had the cards around on the bar, and Tony looked at me, I looked at him, didn't have to say anything. Go ahead, select a card. Signed it. He went out with it, I've got it. And Daryl Martinez's girlfriend at the time, Sophie Evans, was at the fireplace. It was a Friday night, it was busy as hell. I wouldn't be able to get away with it. So I told her, would you go in the woman's room, put this on the toilet seat in the center stall, and steer the lady in the blue dress towards that area.
Yeah.
She said, sure. Again, he said, your card's gone. Appear anywhere you'd like. The library, the Hat and Hair Bar, the dining room, the woman's room. Just name one.
Right.
She named the woman's room. She went and came back screaming. She was whiter than this business card and literally shaking. Screaming and shaking so loud that you could hear a pin drop in the main bar and Irma's room.
It was what's going on. Yeah.
It was just incredible. And Larry says to Tony, well, what happened? And Tony says, lady selected a card. I never left the bar. I gave her a choice of one of many rooms to find her card. She picked the woman's room. She went there, and her card was on the toilet seat sign. That's what happened. Well, Larry got so mad, he slammed his hand down on the bar so hard that actually my glass of wine lifted. Seriously.
Wow.
And he said, damn it. He says, that's my trick. He says, I invented card to urinal. Now, if you remember, Giorgio wrote a column in the Genie
magazine.
Well, if you go back and look at the right date, you'll find a complete page by him of what I just told you.
By Larry or Tony?
No, by Tony.
Yeah.
Tony wrote the article, and he wrote what I just explained to you.
Yeah.
And at the end, he writes, in order to preserve magic history, card to urinal belongs to Larry Jennings. The card to woman's toilet seat belongs to Howard Hamburg and Tony Short. That's in the genie.
That's funny. That's good.
But those days are long gone.
They have. That's good to hear some of those. Well, tell you what, that's probably going to be a good place to wrap here because I've got to get ready. Going to close that showroom and get ready for the next one. Howard, let me ask you, by the way.
Get those bunnies ready.
My podcast is called the Magic Word Podcast. What is your magic word? It may not be like abracadabra kind of a thing, but it could be a credo, you know, a philosophy of life.
Actually, I do have a word that I use all the time,
which is
Artanus B.D.
Artanus B.D. B is Bravo D. David.
Yeah, because it's the Artanus Bonum deal, and I use that word all the time for certain things.
Artanus B.D.
Yeah, because Artanus had a Bonum deal that was great, and he didn't want people to know who he was, so it's Sinatra backwards. That was his family name, Sinatra. So he made it Artanus, just like, you know, in Expert at the Card Table.
Yes,
you know,
right.
Her name's right backwards.
Andrews, right.
Andrews. Well, his name was Sinatra, and he made it Artanus.
I like that. How about that? Learn something new every day. And we did right here. Hope you guys enjoyed those stories from Howard Hamburg. Thank you very much. So for now, Scotty out. Hey, this is Scott Wells again for The Magic Word, and we're at Howl's in Venice right now with Chris Korn. Hey, Chris.
Hey, everybody.
And also, we're here with a bartender. What is your name? Sorry.
Eddie.
And Eddie was just talking about Las Vegas. Tell me about what it was you saw.
Well, we were at the Matt King show, and I had to take my grandmother to a show. It's not going to be offensive, still be fun. So we tried this guy out. So he does a trick. We're midway to the back of the audience. He's on the stage, and I don't remember what he was saying or doing, but he was, you know, prepping this trick. And I think he maybe got into a box or something. And either way, the box just all of a sudden folded, hit the floor.
Yeah.
And then, next thing you know, I think he had some cymbals. He started hitting the cymbals, and he was right behind us in the back of the audience. And it was just, it's like, okay, if he went into a box, maybe he went under the stage. But how did he get way back to the back of the, and it just blew us away. So it was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, magic. That was impressive, obviously. So Chris and I are working at the castle here this week, and you're working early. So, and do you work there once a year or
twice a year?
Twice a year, okay. And always in the close-up room. You ever work over in the parlor?
Yeah, I worked in the parlor and down in the Peller. Peller's my favorite.
Tell me about that, because that's something new. I mean, I haven't been here since '97, so it's
the Peller Theater is downstairs where the library is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a space that wasn't really used all that much. And they incorporated something. I used to work in a theater in St. Louis called Flim Flam.
Mm-hmm.
And Dennis Shane had designed a room, which is almost identical to what Peller looks like today, with tiered cocktail chairs.
For the audience
going up, right? Yeah, you have cocktail tables at different levels, and so people could have a drink and watch a show.
Okay.
And they sort of adapted that or independently created that, I guess. I don't know. But that feel so that everybody could see. And it's just a nice, warm feel. And it's somewhere between close-up and doing stand-up. Somewhere between the close-up room. The feel of the room is somewhere between the close-up room and the parlor.
Because a smaller audience than the parlor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it allows you enough, you have enough stage space to
kind of walk around a little
to
bit.
To play, walk around a little bit.
Because you're not working behind a table or anything. So it's,
you can choose to use the table or not.
Okay.
So you can do some things that you would do in the close-up room, but now expand them and make them a little bit.
Now, it's called the Peller again?
The Peller Theater.
Now, that was named after who? You know?
That I do not have that information. Okay. I should have that information, but I do not.
All right. I was going to ask you about Magic Outlaws, that you were performing on that for a time. Tell me something about the series.
Yeah, it was a show. It was on the Travel Channel. Just re-aired again recently.
Mm-hmm. It did. Just one season?
Just two episodes.
Oh,
so
okay.
Filmed two pilots. And they test market that. I mean, you know,
they try it at different air slots, air times, and they see what the ratings do, and from there they sort of decide whether it's something they want to pursue or not.
Right.
And it depends on how many things. They may have 8 other, 20 other projects, and whichever, you know, gets the highest numbers for advertisers, for advertising dollars, mm-hmm. that's what they basically go with.
Okay.
So you could have a great show. Doesn't mean it's going to go anywhere. And
yeah.
Sometimes you can have a horrible show, and they just
think it's great.
They think it's great, and they think it's, you know, that's the perfect thing.
It's
to
just
fit.
How it tests.
Yeah, we need something to fill this slot, no matter what.
Yeah.
So, and the show, it's done well. We're sort of waiting to hear on that, but it was really fun. I think
you and who?
It was David Minkin and Ben Seidman, both very creative, really ambitious ideas.
Mm-hmm.
For me on the show, I wanted to really go more personality and let loose a little.
Yeah.
You know, just be able to have fun and be fun guy.
Was it street magic kind of stuff?
Yeah, street magic. Yeah. But what I forgot, and this is my fifth series, one of the things it's so easy to forget is even though you think you have editing rights, you know, to go, say, okay, I don't want to use this or do use this, you don't. So some of my funniest moments, which I'll be posting online very soon, were edited from the show. So
okay.
Some of the magic I did specifically was to be playful and very fun.
Like what?
Like sort of like David Williamson's, you know, like he has all this byplay.
Yeah.
But it's the byplay that builds and makes a trick that might not be a miracle, but it's a really good trick.
Yeah.
But it's all the byplay that builds up to this, and then everyone explodes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take out, you know, here's the setup, you're walking into the trick, and then suddenly you're at the end of the trick.
It's disjointed. It didn't seem like it.
Right. And
yeah.
It wasn't that great of a reaction.
Yeah.
It's not. You're always battling with what producers or directors.
Right. So you, as the creative person, don't have the final say on the final cut.
Even if it's in your contract.
Even if it's
usually.
Can I say that was your fifth series? What else?
Yeah. First series was Mondo Magic, and that was about 10 years ago in A&E.
Yeah.
Before that show was sort of handed over to Chris Angel, and then that went overseas. To Asia and exploded over there. Like they loved the exploded. We had 50.
Did you shoot any more for there?
We had 50. Yeah, we did. We did a second series there, and we had about 50 million viewers.
Wow.
And then we did a third season on AXN, and ended up with around 72 million viewers worldwide. Airs in many different, in some of the most remote places in the world, but the ratings were really, really high.
Why did they do a third season?
Didn't push for it after that. I've been trying to get back into the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how famous or popular you are,
overseas.
They have that T-shirt that says "I'm famous in Japan." I'm that guy.
They know me there.
I know. It's like among the small.
It's like Jerry
people.
Lewis. Yeah.
Well, I'm so tall. Right. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So So I did a show for the BBC in London, and that show did extremely well in the ratings. It was the number one rated show of the year, I believe.
What was that
BBC,
called?
The Magicians.
Okay.
And it was a great opportunity. Paul Wilson was one of the producers on that. But I worked with Luis de Matos and Barry and Stewart. They're both fantastic magicians.
Yeah, they are.
And it was great, really, to work, you know, on a set that large in the old Pinewood Studios where all the
Bond
films.
Movies
films.
Sure.
Yeah, I stayed in the, they put me up in the small city of Slough.
I know where that is. Slough or Slough.
Yeah, there's like four restaurants, two bars. Maybe two.
I didn't know
but I had
there
to go.
My
apartment,
that was it?
The apartment they put me in is fantastic. So I was able to cook, and so that's sort of, you know, cooking is therapeutic and relax, you know. But I cook 2 to 3 times a day at home, so I was very specific. I wanted a place with a kitchen.
So you consider yourself a foodie?
Yes,
definitely. Okay, cool. Okay.
So from there, and then came back here, and I had a few things that were being bit at, and Magic Outlaws was the one that sort of bit first.
Okay.
And it's a really fun ride. The show is a fun ride. It's like three guys, you know, jumping in a Cadillac and cruising around and doing.
I remember the series. I remember
doing
magic. Couple of shows. Yeah.
So,
do you think it's going to get picked up or going to?
I couldn't answer that from one day to the next.
Now, while we were here earlier yesterday, I guess you had done a shoot for Playboy.
Yes.
Radio and TV. What was that all about?
Yeah, they do a morning show and they do a happy hour show, and it's really fun. You know, you're doing some magic for the girls.
Radio,
you do some magic for the girls on radio, but also it's televised on the Playboy channel.
So now, when you say the girls, those are the announcers,
I
guess?
There's two hosts for the show, but they just had a few of the bunnies in and a few of the playmates just sort of come by. And
they had great reactions, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They were really fun. And, they were, after we did, I did some magic, they're like, well, let's see if you can impress Chris. And I'm going to go ahead and say they did.
Okay.
They were very impressed.
You know, what you remind me is the modern magic hedonists. You might recall, maybe not, at your age, years ago, it used to be that the guys known as the magic hedonists were, Paul Harris and Daryl and Michael Lamar, I believe, were involved, and they kind of toured around the world, and they were called the magic hedonists.
And they had put at one, was that the Brainstorm in the Bahamas?
That's it, yep.
Right, yeah, and Vernon was, Vernon Aces in Sand.
Sounds like that you're one of the new modern magic hedonists.
We're heading in that direction, if
I'm
not
already. Sounds like it, yeah. Because you said you just did the Playboy golf tournament in Vegas, too? That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I used to do quite a bit of their poker parties in Vegas.
So I assume you've been at the Mansion.
I have not as yet.
Not of all the stuff you've done.
Mansion, yeah.
No. So if Hef is listening to
40
this.
Or 50 of those parties, but I've never been. I have a feeling that's right around the corner.
Okay. You say you've been to 40 or 50 of those parties.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been there, but not been a performer there. Is that what you mean?
No, I've been no performer. Been hired. Yeah.
Okay. You have performed at the Mansion.
Not at the Mansion. No, in Vegas, for example, they have a poker party.
The poker party at the Playboy.
It's like Copenhagen. Copenhagen and Playboy did these poker parties.
Right.
Sort of high end.
Right.
Very limited. It's a very small group, 20-25, versus I just did Links and Laces, where 300 women are flown in from all over the world.
And they're not hot golf chance, are they?
No, not a one of them. Not a one of them. I was working. I was in bed very early every night. Very early.
Okay, yeah, we can take that a different direction here, too. By the way, these martinis are really good here. That we are here on Magic and Martini Thursday in Howl's at Venice, by the way. So we're kind of a little ways away from the Magic Castle right now. And so we're having a St. Martini Martini.
Yes.
And it has, what is it, basil and...
Yeah, it's St. Germain's.
Grey Goose.
Kettle One Vodka. A little St. Germain's, which is made from elderflower. It's a liquor, elderflower. It's a little bit sweet, so you only use a light amount of that. And fresh crushed basil.
It's grape juice. Grapefruit juice.
And it shaken up. It's perfect for the summer. It's a great afternoon.
Very refreshing.
Yeah, it's refreshing.
Wow,
right?
This goes down fast.
I know, they go down way too easy.
Fast.
Way too easy.
Are we going to have time for another one before we go and have lunch?
I think we should do that. I think we should do that.
Let's see if he can load us up with another one before we get going much further. So what are your long-term plans? I mean, do you stuff for TV? You like working?
Yeah, I don't know. I think TV can be very, you look at TV and be like, how'd that guy get on TV? Or how does, television's extremely difficult, right? And I think the toughest part for anyone you see on TV is most people don't understand just how hard work goes into that and what it takes to even try to be on or stay in a good mood. So you've got all these producers and staff and timelines of... You have this restaurant, for example. We have 2 hours to film here. Well, I really need maybe 6 hours to film that trick. Mm-hmm. Well, all you got is two because of the budget,
Right.
So you're constantly fighting certain effects that you know should look much, much better. And there's not time to make that happen. And those effects get... they sometimes end up getting used, and sometimes, and there's some cases where I don't want it to, don't air that. It's not, the magic deserves a way better moment than that.
Can we get two more of these? Okay.
So it's a constant battle. I think having full control, which, there's only only two people that I know, two or three now, that have that full control, which are both of the Davids, where they have full control over edits, cuts, how it's filmed. And doing a series is, it's borderline insane.
No, I recognize you. Manichek's my business partner. Of course, he's working with Chris.
Yeah. And that schedule is just, it beats you down.
Oh, sure. I'm having to come up with all the different ideas
and perfect them. You know, when you first start to do a series, like I'm really creative in the art of magic, and I've been very lucky that way, right? But you start doing a series, and you start running through,
all
those stacks
ideas.
Of notebooks. It's like, and the problem is that you have producers or network executives come in, and because they get a little feel of what they think, how magic works.
Well, you guys missed out on just a great conversation. We continued on for about another 20-30 minutes, and apparently we didn't get any of that last part. So rather than replicating that, we're going to try and pick up on some of it. We were Chris and I were in the bar talking about working at on television. You were saying there's a couple of guys, I guess, who kind of have editorial rights, and that was David and David, I guess, right now. But rather than kind of going back and picking up over there, I'm trying to think where else that we need to go, because one of the things that we got involved in talking about was creativity and how to exercise your creative muscle and what you do in order to create. And so we left the bar, went and had lunch, and now we're back over in Chris's place, and he has as a house guest then right now, Paul Vigil, who's also going to be performing at the Magic Castle. So we welcome Paul. Hey, Paul.
Hi, everybody.
So I'll let you kind of chime in and help as well, whenever we're going to be talking a little bit about creativity and how that you create, whether it's your character or, tricks. And you had said then, Chris, that you start to create your things by actually writing down some ideas at night. You've got like a...
Yeah, a journal basically that you keep by the bed, which I had mentioned earlier, the Andre Cole. Sort of that was the first person I had heard, having a journal and sort of forcing yourself to... His idea, I believe, is that you to come up with a new idea every single day. So at the end of the year, whether the idea was plausible or possible or not, you still ended up with this list of 365 things that you could do.
Yeah, that's true. I remember Andre saying that he would come up with, when he was in college, three new ideas before he would go to bed at night, and that he may not get to bed until way early in the morning, but they had to be something that was not necessarily in the known domain then right now, but something that could be created and where money was no object, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you kind of reach that same way as far as trying to come up with any and everything to... vanish?
Yeah, the whole idea, at least for me, is you don't always have to have a method right away. And sometimes we do come up with, you're just playing around with the cards or an object and an idea. Oh, this could be used for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to think or create in the way where even if I don't have a method, what is the effect or what could I, is this possible? And coming up with a way to do that. And sometimes that takes... it could take a month, and sometimes it could take 14 years. You don't know.
So you may work on the same idea for a long time, as opposed to having different ideas all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, in other words, that rather than saying, "Okay, I'm going to, like, say, make the moon disappear," or tomorrow I'm going to, have a card, appear on a moving train or something, or whatever. So
there's certainly a priority list that I place where there's specifically certain things I want to work on. That are at the top of the list, and others, when you get burnt out on those, you flip through and get another idea. And I think I had talked about, you watching movies and using music, other outside inspirations other than magic itself to motivate and create ideas.
So it's important to have outside interest and not just focus on magic only, to read the newspaper, watch the news, know what's happening, read other books other than magic books.
I know when you bring this up, there's a specific point in a movie that you've told me about that you've used to spark yourself in the past, and it's that scene with Jim Carrey.
Oh, right.
What was that?
That was years ago when Liar Liar,
yeah,
the movie came out. So one of the prop card effects I had on my, it was on my priority list for years, and then it moved off and on, was multiple card selection.
Okay, mm-hmm. Right.
But there were, you know, one of the things with that effect is that after the third or fourth card, the audience tends, they know you're going to find the rest. So it became about timing and pacing. And in that movie, in Liar Liar, if you watch that scene where Jim Carrey now cannot lie, and he gets to go in front of the head of the board and, you know, everyone that's the panel almost, and he starts to go around the room, and they're like, hey, you know, the lady knows that he can't lie, so she brings him in front of the CEO and says, hey, Jim, why don't you tell them what you said about him this morning? And he literally can't lie. It's like, that you're this pontificating a-hole. You know, and it's this long pause. So you had tension before the effect started. There's this build-up. Then he goes off on him. The room's silent. And then everyone starts, he starts laughing. And everyone breaks. He's like, dude, the whole room. And now he starts telling the truth about each person, what he feels about them.
And the more he tells, the funnier it got.
It was the timing and the pacing from the moment of that that ended up giving me the timing and pacing that I use for my multiple card selection. It was between 10 and 14 cards. So it's like, and there's a long pause at one moment, which Juan talks about building, giving that pause to crush, you know.
Right.
If you want the standing ovation, there has to be a break. It can't be a straight line to the top.
Right.
And, so, Paul, that was a good pointing that out. But, yeah, that's how, there was no trick in there, but it was the pacing of the jokes. Didn't take any of the jokes or the insults or lines. It was the timing and pacing of that comedic set that I ended up applying to multiple card selection.
Interesting. So it's not just the creativity of coming up with ideas, but also the creativity of developing the presentation and the character and the personality and the act.
Yeah.
You know, that you you spend time developing, you know, that as well. And speaking of that, then, Paul, when you're going to be developing your act, or what did you have done, that you do a lot of mentalism and everything, and so how do you go about selecting material?
Usually, and I've said this before in the past, is what I'm interested in when it comes to the mentalism, and oftentimes with the magic, too, is displays of power. And my recipe has always been to start off with magic and then move toward the mentalism. That's where I want to end. And that's not something that I thought of, and I took it really from Jimmy Grippo.
And you saw Jimmy perform, I guess, living in Vegas?
No, never.
Never met him?
No, but I've saw, of course, a lot of footage of him, and being in Vegas, I've always collected the stories and asked all the guys for the stories that they do know about Jimmy, and he's larger than life.
Yeah, because I guess those guys who have lived with him and knew him, you know, all the time, and so you kind of learn from him. Well, then what is your creative process? What do you go through?
I usually find in the things that I've created, there's two different ways. One is we have what Chris was referring to earlier, where we have the tools and we take those things and we learn to choreograph them together into a, hopefully a new dance of some sort. And the other one is, again was touched on, is to have the dream first and then take what method you have, or maybe you have to start coming up with a new method. But then usually what I find with that game is there's the dream on one end and the reality on the other, and they're both kind of boring toward each other, and what you hope is that they meet with some congruency at the middle and that you've created something that's in balance. And what I mean by that is you don't want a Frankenstein monster. You don't want a creature with two heads or one longer arm and a shorter arm. You want something that has symmetry and balance to it. And again, it's not always achieved, but you do know when you hit it, those right times, they do seem to come and coalesce together and fit like a hand in a glove.
That's a very good point, because, you don't want to create some monster. I mean, that to some people that's art, but I think the symmetry is a more beautiful thing.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, you're working the Peller Theater.
Yes.
Now, you said also this is you've worked there several times in the past?
I've worked there, one time in the past, but I've been at the castle many times.
Yeah. Usually in the close-up or parlor? Or
I've done close-up and I've done parlor.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Have you thought about wanting to do the stage, or do you feel like it?
Someday, maybe.
It seems like now that I think that they have just one person who works the stage, you know, where it used to be a variety. They have two or three different people. Is that the way that it is now, Chris, that they have?
It varies quite a bit. You know, some weeks there are three people. But,
okay.
But occasionally someone comes in and sort of Paul's taking over the Peller, as he should be for the weekend, right? It's a one-man show.
We got a really good weekend coming up. Of course, Chris, Ben Seidman, Darren George. Romeo,
George
and yourself.
Chobot.
Yeah, and George. So I'm looking forward to a really exciting
Eason.
Next... And Doc Eason, how could I forget? Of course, I'm rooming with Doc Eason, so we decided to share a room together, so we should have a pretty good time over the next few days also.
That should be some fun. Now, the Peller Theater is, of course, as Chris, you explained to me earlier, was kind of an intimate theater that's between the parlor and the close-up gallery. And it's kind of like the venue at King's Inc. where you had worked for so many years.
A little bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your contract ended with them a while back, and
so they closed down.
Oh,
so
is that what happened?
Yep, it's not there anymore.
Okay.
I don't know what's there. I haven't been around there for the last few months. I'm sure something is on its way in or
about
not.
About to ask you if you knew what that was in that space.
But. I don't. But I had a great 3 years there. I learned a lot. I performed a lot. I got to try out a lot of things, and it's an experience I wouldn't have traded for anything.
Yeah. And did you find that that was a great venue, so that way you had that as a launching pad where you can make contacts and really get a lot of other engagements?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Was that your main purpose in trying to work there?
Yeah, there was a lot of reasons. And mostly it was just a love of performing.
Yeah. And trying to find a place where you could perform.
Right.
Yeah. And what I think is cool is that you actually made a place to perform, which wasn't there before. I mean, who would think of performing at a tattoo parlor?
You know?
I mean, that was kind of strange. I mean, how did you actually come
across
that?
It was
Did they come to you or did you go to them?
They came to me.
I mean, it's not like you got ink on you or anything.
No.
You know, so it wasn't some place you hung out, I imagine, all the time.
No, not really.
But it seemed like a nice marriage that worked well for the both.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I had the best time, and we're all friends. You know, it's unfortunate that whatever their dreams were on their ends didn't quite work out, but I'm glad that I had my little piece of the pie there.
Yeah, cool. And what's in the long-term plans then now?
I don't know what I'm going to be doing for the next 3 days.
Just whatever happens, happens. Just just let it happen. Let it flow.
Right now
and
it
wash
is.
Over
yeah,
you. Yeah.
I haven't had that opportunity to kind of just let the wind blow my sails wherever they want to for the last few years, so I'm embracing this right now.
Yeah, as well you should, you know, for a little while. Now, Chris, we talked a little bit earlier, and then we lost that part of the podcast. We were asking about the recommendations for youth, or rather, you know, what suggestions that you might have for young people or those interested in magic. And, of course, everything seems to be street magic and, you know, one-trick DVDs and that kind of a thing. And so do you recall what you had kind of said earlier?
Sort of simply, it was that, you know, a lot of the younger generation of magicians right now, everyone's learning from these DVDs and they're learning one trick and learning this trick. And I think a lot of what's been forgotten about is how to actually put together a set or a show.
Right.
And even if it's as small as three tricks, having a beginning, a middle, and an end, I think that's very, very important. Just to pace, even if you have only eight tricks, take three of those and see how you put those together so you're not going in and out of your pocket so much, so you don't have to stop the room and stop the audience. Do you have something to say between those effects?
Right.
Put together a little mini show, like learn how to have a set that you can sort of own. And the other thing I think I'd mentioned earlier before we got lost in digital land was, you know, take those three tricks, and once you really build that up and you have this nice build, take that and reverse it and start with your strongest trick first and see how you could possibly, if you want to strengthen your opening effect, that's the way to do it. Start with the most powerful thing, and through that you will automatically start to go into a mode,
right,
to recreate something maybe you've done for 10 years that you've always opened with.
Right.
How do you make your opener your closer? Or try to, and add new little twists or things to it.
I think that's great advice, not just for those people who are getting started in magic, but also for those who are full-time pros or whatever, wherever you are on your path, because that it tends to make everything... All right, one last glitch we had there, so we'll try and wrap this up quickly over here. Sorry, keep coming in and out.
Technical difficulties.
Technical, that's right.
Too much magic in one room.
That's what it is. It's starting to implode. So I was asking about other kinds of issues or problems that you may have had or encountered along the way, and I was going to ask you then, what kind of situation, Chris, have you ever had that comes to mind that's been a particularly thorny situation?
Just traveling in general, it's really the things that can zap energy, like humidity, heavy humidity.
For cards, that's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're out, you thought you were going to be inside, but now you're outside.
Yeah.
So you're not dressed for outdoor weather necessarily.
Yeah.
And you just, when you start using your energy up because you're sweating and it's so hot.
Yeah.
That's been a big one for me. So you're trying to do something and the wind's blowing, you can't use a light, you can't light a lighter, you can't.
Right.
Now you're like, you need a blowtorch over here?
Here's a magic boy. Can't even light a fire.
Can't even light a lighter. Look at this guy.
Yeah. What kind of magician are you? You can't control fire?
Can I get the rest of my check now? Before I step into this shark infested water.
And then, Paul, briefly as well, you were just saying, before I cut out over there, about, handling people who are not necessarily hecklers, but people who have had too much to drink, particularly there in Caesars.
And again, I don't know if I would even, when I look around, I don't really know how many exemplars there are even of that style, and again, it comes from, again, me
controlling the audience,
emulating as much as I can of that Jimmy Grippo style of things, and like, again, if you really want to show people magic, you can show them tricks, So if they say shuffle, you can, you can in just a minute. Let me finish and show you this.
Sure.
But when all the nails are in the coffin, you have to, know where all of those contingencies can arise. And it really only comes from having the raw experience, because you can never know what people are going to say. And it reminds me of something Eugene Berger told me once when I was a teenager, and it's always stuck with me, is the master is the one who made the mistakes.
That's true.
It happens to you one night. Something happens. Somebody asks this question at the wrong time or at the inopportune moment, and you realize that it was your turn of phrase that egged that on at the wrong time, or to switch that and learn how to deflect that. And then you also think to yourself, if this ever happens to me again, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Learn to experience, certainly don't get freaked out about it just because you drop the thumb tip or whatever. Yeah. That, getting out.
Was another thing about King Inca. It just allowed me a place to explore and to...
gain confidence.
Yeah. I never really had that. I worked in a magic shop, since I was 15 years old. And I can remember at the beginning of working there having some trepidation for performing for people, but it never really stuck with me for that long.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad about that. But I also think that oftentimes I feel that I've prepared and I've practiced enough so that that just doesn't even creep in for me now.
Mm-hmm.
Where if I feel I wasn't prepared, then probably it would have more of a chance to be able to come in and mess with things.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Okay, to wrap up. Magic word. Since the Magic Word podcast, we miss this now for the third time. We'll try it then one more last time. Chris, your magic word is?
Hee-haw. That's it.
Okay, and the reason is?
A buddy of mine, I have a habit of sticking my foot in my mouth. It's a little bit of what Paul was just saying, where you realize that I set myself up.
I feel like I stuck my foot in my mouth.
Yeah, like Paul just did. You know. You heard everything he said. Yeah. Like, oh boy, who started drinking it again? Let him go. Let him
we
go.
We really should have rehearsed this. Huh? I know.
Nice. Nice. So, yeah, when something goes wrong, things are going to go wrong. That's the fact, no matter yeah. how hard you practice. And what Paul's saying, it takes experience. But once you narrow it down to that small space that Paul was just saying, your moments or chances for things going sideways
yeah.
become very limited.
Less, right.
But I just have a habit, for whatever reason, when I'm talking to a woman, of sticking my foot in my mouth. Like, it just happens. It's going to happen. And my buddy saw me doing it one time from across the room.
You could see it happening.
He could see it happening.
Slow motion.
And he just
yeah.
was walking up to me with a drink. And as I've said something, he just walked up and he goes, hee-haw. And he just... and then he just turned U-turn right away. Hee-haw. Good job, Corn.
Yeah.
Like, I knew. But that happens in your show. Like, things are going to go wrong. And it's like, how do you handle that? Do you... let the audience see you break down, or you know, you are going to make an ass of yourself at some moment, and you have to accept that. It's not, you cannot be perfect.
Sometimes you might find that your way out of that might be something that would be more successful in something else,
yes.
and you might need to try to recreate that moment again in the future.
Me.
You know,
believe yeah. me, though, it's by some of the things a spectator has said, or a questioner's statement, as Paul mentioned, they said to you that throws you off in the middle of a set that you've done.
Yeah.
2,000 times, and somebody just asks the question at the right time, and it can throw you off, or it can also throw you in a direction.
And
what you find is
when you over time, when you minimalized all of those situations, that when they do arise, even though they may be somewhat jarring in the moment, it's later on at home at night when you realize just the gold that you've been handed, though.
Yes. Mm,
yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Because when you were talking earlier about putting these effects together, there's another phrase that stuck with me quite a bit recently. And it's something that Ross Johnson said to me, and he said, it's just small steps toward perfection, Paul. Just every day, just, you know, it's never really finished.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves you a lot of room to grow,
small
to transform,
steps toward perfection.
And to leave things not really knowing where they may end up. And I think that's fun, and it's exhilarating, and it's nice to have it open-ended.
Hmm.
Well, it can be taken. It's easy to get pissed off or upset when someone does heckle you sometimes, but through some of those statements where someone was speaking out of line or out of turn, and before you attack them and become aggressive, maybe with the spectator, to regroup the room, so occasionally they say something, wow, I didn't think about that in the effect, and that's mm-hmm. the golden nugget that Paul was sort of saying.
Yeah.
You end up,
yeah.
you go home and like, I never... there's this moment in Coins Across I was doing.
Again, you've practiced a 10,000 times in your room, and you've used your imagination to think of all those reactions, mm-hmm. to try to look at it from the left, the right, the center, over your shoulder, to understand what that other person is seeing. And all of a sudden, when those words come out, you're given it. It's handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have the new perspective that you can work with and deal with.
Right.
And so, again, that's the gold. And oftentimes those lines that people say are the lines oftentimes that you end up rephrasing and realize that's exactly what needed to be said right here.
Mm-hmm. And it prevents that from happening again, too.
Right. Yeah. Well, in my own work, an example is with performing Haunted Deck. And where most people, the ending of the trick is the card mm-hmm. coming out of the pack. To me, it's the line that comes after that. And it's, I don't even need to turn the card over after that, do I? And it was something that somebody else had said to me one time, because I snapped my fingers and the card shot out. And he looked right up at me and said, you don't even need to turn that over. And he walked away.
Wow.
But again, I realized that it was a line that needed to be said at that time. And now I realize that that's where the power is at. Not necessarily the power, but the focus comes.
Seems like Max Maven had that as like a closer of one of his early routines a long, long time ago, in which that he had a card and that he had a volunteer still on stage, and he left the stage with the card not being revealed yet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like I've already proven all of this to begin with. I think, you know, there's nothing more to say. Thank you and good night. I don't even know if he said that. He just walked off, and the guy is still standing there, and it's like, finally, he looks at it and turns around, you know, and so there's, you know, applause he's getting while he's backstage.
Right.
You know.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But, so what is your magic word?
Oh,
Or credo, or philosophy.
Symmetry was a good one. That one still sticks with me
a
lot.
Symmetry.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's, and it's part of the Platonic ideal. There's beauty, truth, and symmetry. You know, and I think those are always good ideals to shoot for.
Beauty,
subjective,
truth,
but worth mm-hmm. shooting for.
That's right. Something we do shoot for every day. You know, so
small steps toward perfection.
But that would be the exact reverse of what I said. Thanks, Paul.
We're on different ends of the castle this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul's going to need a place to stay tonight.
So if anyone,
it may not be here. That's right. All right. Well, thank you guys very much. Hopefully this has all got recorded. You got to the benefit of some of the knowledge over here, too, and a little fun. Thanks very much. Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you, Paul.
You're most welcome.
And for now, Scotty out. Hello, Scott Wells again for the Magic Word podcast, and I am here still at the Magic Castle. Just finished the members-only luncheon at 12:30, and kind of in between. And Darren Romeo is joining me now. Hello, Darren. How are you?
Good morning and good afternoon.
It's whatever time of the day. Good day. That's always a good cover
for an entertainer. It's good morning for me.
I know what you mean.
Three more cups of coffee, and then almost the voice.
Your voice still doesn't sound bad, and that's one of the reasons that I wanted to talk with you, because you are billed as the voice of magic. And I thought, you know, this is. I've had over 100 podcasts on the Magic Word, and I thought, you know, I've been a voice that people recognize, but you are the voice, so I should have, an interview with the voice.
That's
the way.
Very nice, Scott. Thank you very much.
That I should have that. Now, this was the first time that you've been back to the castle, and you said 13 years?
13 years.
Yeah.
I think it's 13, because I remember that I think we did the Millennium New Year's, I think,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I've been gauging it on, but Irene and all of us have conveniently forgotten.
Yeah.
Because none of us want to admit that it was that long ago.
Now, some of the people who are listening to the podcast will remember back, of course, that you were the heir apparent to Siegfried and Roy, and they're working the Mirage and everything. That I'm sure there's a lot of stories and everything that go along with that as to how did they first you first meet? That's a common question you get.
But. Well, one of the reasons why I'm so happy to be back at the castle, and I can honestly say that I've kind of stuck my head in the sand for all these years, pretty much out of fear for returning, because, you know, the years at the Mirage and that journey, the show kind of got so big that it became a challenge for me to think intimate again.
Mm.
And so I was really worried about living up to the reputation and trying, you know, a lot, you know, to answer your question, I owe the castle and the Larson family the entire connection with Siegfried and Roy, because mm-hmm. It was initially Irene that dragged them to see me in Vegas at the Flamingo. When I say dragged, I mean that Siegfried was like, I don't go to no magic show. No. Irene, no. But
you do a good one. Most people do like a Di Vernon, you know, but you do a great Siegfried.
And no, he literally went kicking and screaming, as I would too, where their schedule was at the time. But no, that is how that happened. You know, first.
So you had your own show at the Flamingo.
I had my own show at the Flamingo. First, I moved to Vegas for Caesar's Magical Empire, which I became the magic director of when I was 20.
Wow.
So, everyone's doing
the
math.
Did you lie about your age or something? Say you were 21?
I didn't, but Gary Goddard and Tony Christopher from Landmark Entertainment did. So, Sorry, Gary, didn't mean to sell you up the river. And actually, that wasn't the problem. You want to know what the problem was? The only problem was flash paper, because the casinos had some sort of rule about pyro having to be 21.
Interesting.
So I promise, wink, wink, there was no flash paper in that show at the time.
Yeah.
On grounds that might incriminate Caesar's Palace. And,
right.
But,
so Siegfried and Roy came in.
Yeah. So that was the reason for moving there. And then through that, beating down every door in Las Vegas before Siegfried and Roy. And when I say beating down the door, I mean very tenacious and knocking on and just having the confidence to try to sell a show. And I thought it would take 6 months. It took 4 years. And then finally
Were you singing at that time, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we used the Flamingo to kind of, like, announce that. So the first full evening show with the music and the magic was the Flamingo. Mm-hmm. And then that was where Siegfried and Roy came to see the show,
yeah,
because of Irene. Yeah.
You know, I probably just missed you in New York because you were with the Fantastics for a number of years. Is that right?
Yes.
And I
Well, not for a number of years. Very short.
For a short time? Because mm-hmm. it was in the 90s that I had worked at the in that theater at Magic Monday Night Magic.
At Sullivan Street Playhouse.
Sullivan Street, right.
Wasn't that such... It wasn't
intimate. I love the theater.
Such a beautiful... I mean, for Magic, the angles are a bit challenging because mm-hmm. for those of you that are listening, that theater, even though it lasted for 42 years for the Fantastics, the audience on the side was about eight. So to your left and to your right, they're like 8, 9, 10, 11 rows, and center was only 3 rows. So it was almost like the audience is more in thrust. So for Magic, it's kind of challenging, but mm-hmm. but a beautiful intimate space.
Yeah,
it was quite something.
I liked it for my style because I don't do a lot of things. It doesn't matter if I'm working in the round. You know, a lot mm-hmm. of times you're doing humor, some comedy, and everything.
It's great then.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so back over there then. Siegfried and Roy saw you, love you, and so then they. Had you do a bit part in their show, or as a walk on one night?
You know what? It was a time where rumors were running rampant that they were going to retire, mm-hmm. and I don't know.
They were in their 60s probably at the time, probably right about 59, 60.
That's exactly
that
right.
Time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, long story short, it was never supposed to be Protégé, mm-hmm. and it was never supposed to be Siegfried and Roy presents Darren Romeo. It evolved that way.
Hmm, interesting.
It started to be just a friendship, and literally my show at the Flamingo was a vehicle for Siegfried to like sink his teeth into helping a kid out.
Yeah.
Because their show was set and solid.
Sure.
And to an extent, I don't even think that, you know, he would be upset with me saying that. Every listener can understand that there's a bit of a boredom that kicks in when your routine mm-hmm. is the same.
Yeah, for some
and,
years.
And not in front of the audience.
Yeah, we all see the freshness. That's important. You have that freshness
yeah,
every show.
Right. So I think, you know, working on Darren Romeo as a project, you know, became, you know, a new thing. So I was always so proud that's how I felt like I could give back to them, because how could I say thank you to people that are giving me, you know, everything at that time? You
right.
know, their name, their expertise, their legend. And so I just felt that the friendship was organic, and it was just a nice reciprocal thing. But it didn't turn into Siegfried and Roy presents Darren Romeo until finally about a year and a half into the friendship. They were just like, enough, we're going to do this ourselves. No, mm-hmm. no producer, no this. It's our home, it's our stage. We should launch it there. And
yeah.
so that's how it
that's
began.
How it worked out.
Yeah.
And then as far as the last night show, you know, whenever that Roy was dragged off the stage over there, that must have been traumatic, certainly.
Well, I was in China at the time.
Hmm.
And it was gut-wrenching.
Especially for you being so far away, my goodness. I mean, you're in China and being such close friends to hear about that, and there's nothing you could do to be close to him.
It's a terrible story, because the people that brought me to China, literally, I walked off the stage in a performance, and she basically said, with broken English, she said, "Roy bit by tiger, you go sign autograph." And
wow.
I couldn't digest it.
What?
I couldn't comprehend what was going on.
No.
And I didn't believe it, and it was too surreal. And I got Lynette on the phone, and at that particular point, we thought we lost them. It was terrible, terrible,
yeah.
terrible situation. A mm-hmm. terrible phone call. And of course, I felt helpless. So
yeah,
I was stuck in China. I finally this is going to be an amazing story for the listeners. When I finally caught up with Siegfried, you know, and we were both very, very emotional. I said, "I'm canceling the show and I'm coming home." And he said, "It's bad enough that Roy's in the position that he's in. If you leave that show and come home, you'll break his heart too."
Wow.
So, I mean, these are the type of people that they are. So it's pretty amazing. You know, it's life lesson.
Yeah.
Show must go on. Old mm-hmm. school. German,
yeah,
and Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah.
So it's yes, there's a lot of stories.
Yeah. So. Well, then flash forward, then past that, and then they that was kind of
well. Basically, I lived like a boy band. From my perspective, you know, they launched me and they put the billboards up, and of course, you know, the dog and pony show of a career that helped mm-hmm. launch, you know, for me to go elsewhere. You know, so then I was doing the Renos and the Biloxis and the Branson for a long time.
I remember. Mm-hmm.
And
David Sandy was working with you.
Oh yeah, David's mm-hmm. an amazing friend and producer.
Sure.
And so it's just an incredible, incredible journey. But you know, you never know what happens. The Roy story, and just from a career point of view, it's you got to enjoy here and today and now, because, you know, it's here today and it's gone tomorrow. You got to really live in the moment.
How did you develop your character? Was it an evolution from just being in the Fantastics and singing? You decided to bring that into magic as well because you loved the two? How did you develop your character?
It's a great question. I think the only thing that I tried to stick to in my heart and my gut when I choose things for the audience is it somehow real for me?
Mm-hmm.
And if somehow, some way it's real for me, I feel that I can make it real and relatable to the audience, because I think that the audience always knows that. And they can feel sincerity, and they can feel something that's organic or forced.
Sure, absolutely. So you know if you're mailing it in versus...
Yeah, and we all phone it in sometimes, yeah. and I catch myself at times, especially when the days of the 250 shows a year, mm-hmm. and I'm worried about my voice, and the voice isn't working that well, you have a tendency to do that, and you got to remind yourself to not take that for granted, because,
right.
you know, as an actor and a performer, when you catch yourself doing that, you should get very angry with yourself, because it shouldn't be that way.
Where are you working on now? Because people...
I have been the last thing that I did was Masters of Illusion last year, and then when I left the tour, I was actually taking some time off from mm-hmm. being on stage mm-hmm. and focusing on some movie development things for a variety mm-hmm. of reasons. One, you know, I'm trying to shake things up, you know, professionally. I'd like to get into producing and directing myself, and also just to be brutally honest, my voice just needed a break.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm coming back strong now, and I'm at home when I'm on the stage, so I want to kind of split the difference a little bit more, but
yeah.
I did need some time off.
But what is your method of creativity then, also, as far as we talk about the character and everything, but you know, I always like to ask my guest about how do they become creative? What is their process? I mean, do they come up with an idea?
Is it fair to say that it always changes?
It is. To be creative, it does. You should change.
For me, a lot of times music will inspire a magical idea or a vignette or something that I want to do.
Yep.
And it's been very rare that the magic has come first, believe it or not, and then I find the song. It's normally I hear a song and then the magic just fits in my brain. I go, this is what this song
right.
is screaming to me.
Right.
The only time that I can recall that an illusion came first and then a song was when I was trying to incorporate Siegfried and Roy's song, a beautiful song where, you know, the body's exposed and everything, and I was trying to say, mm-hmm. this is a little bit out of my character. How am I going to sing and do a song to that? So I chose symbolism and I wrote a song that was about, emotionally, about relationships being divided and separated and tortured.
Written from your heart.
Written yeah. from my heart, so that yeah. the illusion would be symbolic.
Makes sense.
Rather than trying to like just be, you know,
like an interlude or what was
yeah,
the
it was
illusion?
A song. It was a song in half. So
okay.
So in that case, I was using the illusion to be the symbolism for mm-hmm. a broken relationship.
Interesting. Hmm. Interesting. Well, I know we're going to be short, Ren, that I've got a show and
yeah
here shortly. We have to leave.
Thank you for squeezing
also.
It in.
Thank you very much.
It almost didn't happen. We just ran into each other in the lobby at the castle, and
yeah.
and honestly, Princess Irene is late, so that shouldn't surprise any of the listeners. So we thank her for creating.
Today.
Hey, yeah, happy birthday,
happy
Erica.
One last thing then, Darren, as well, that the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and being the voice of magic.
The Magic Word.
The Magic Word is my podcast. So I always ask people as they kind of wrap up, what is your magic word? It's not necessarily something that you would say on stage like abracadabra, what it may or may not be, but it's like, what is your philosophy, your chi, your motto, what do you live by, you know, what is important to you in a word or sentence or phrase?
I didn't rehearse this, so the only thing that comes to my brain is love.
Wow.
Because, you know, when you ground yourself with that, whether it's a relationship or a friendship,
love,
or friends or family, that's, you know, it's just, again, the here today, gone tomorrow thing. You know, without that, we're nothing.
Everything is all wrapped up in that passion and everything,
yeah.
and just in the one word, love. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
that was Darren Romeo, and this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word saying, Scotty out. Hello, Scott Wells again for the Magic Word Podcast, and that we're back in the Magic Castle here Sunday afternoon. It is family day at the Magic Castle, so those under 21 are allowed in, and that's also when the junior magicians perform, and they do also some shows for the juniors. They have special children's shows for the kids, too. So when they're finished here in just a few minutes, I'm going to be starting my lecture here this Sunday afternoon, and assisting me with the sales, back-of-the-room sales, is my longtime, old-time friend,
from the Magic Newswire podcast days, Cameron Ramsey. Hey, Cam.
Hello, Scott. How are you doing? It's the only way I can get into the castle, under 21 days. You know?
Under 21 days, oh, that's yeah, right. Yeah. Well, certainly not under 21 inches, because you're a one tall guy. I mean,
I know you can't hear my voice. I understand completely.
For those of you who have listened to Cam's voice over the years, you might have a different impression of this young man of being just a little bit shorter than he is, but he's not. I mean, he's not really extra tall like a Wilt Chamberlain.
I'm about like 1 or 2 inches too at that awkward phase. You know,
that awkward,
flying,
yeah,
at least is awful.
What about you know, lying in bed? I mean, when you go to a hotel or whatever.
Oh yeah, my feet are always. It's not. You don't notice it at this point. It's, yeah, it comes with the territory.
Yeah. Well, you know, Walter Blaney always said. Of course, he's, I don't know what, 6'8", I think, or something. I believe Paul Driscoll 6'11", or yeah, I know these guys are, you know, about the same height. Anyhow, point is that they always have problems, you know, trying to sleep and yeah and. But anyhow, so what you been up to since our Newswire days?
I know it's been forever, I feel like. Traveling a little bit, doing magic, doing, yeah, the real world stuff.
Awesome.
And now I'm here in L.A. working a couple of projects for the summer.
That's pretty cool.
Enjoying the weather and the hot weather. A lot different than Rhode Island.
Well, but it's humid out there, though, isn't it?
You're right. But I don't wear a suit in Rhode Island.
That's right. You're looking sharp here with a coat and tie here today, Zach. Now, are you going to be going to Magic Live?
I hope to. Mm-hmm. I am registered for Magic Live, but we will see what the dates.
No, because of what we got.
What's going on here, yep.
Projects going on out here, yep. Seems like there's so many magicians right now. I've got things in the hopper. You know, since I've come out to L.A., it seems like everybody's got their finger in a pie. There's a casting director saying, oh, yeah, you know, they're coming out, they're going to be going and doing this or that.
It's part of the scary culture out
here. It is, you know, that this is different than Houston or Rhode Island, I know.
Oh, I miss a little Rhodey. Big fish, small bowl there. Big fish, small
you were,
bowl.
You yes. were. So do you,
I took about half the state, just my height, so it was awkward.
So literally, yeah, big fish in a small boat, okay. So what are the types of things are you working on with your show? I mean, have you like the type of show you do, is it really more of a comedy stand-up?
Basically,
thing?
I have two sides. It's, you know, the walk around, which is the bread and butter,
yep,
doing the banquets. And then there's also the comedy side where you get to do a couple comedy clubs in Rhode Island and Boston. And then you mm-hmm. bring that stuff to the banquets for the after-dinner meals also.
Yeah. And now in those things, what would be your go-to type of tricks? I mean, you know, I do a Bill and Lemon, you know, cardiographic linking finger rings. What type of things
you know,
do?
I do a version of the Bill and Lemon that they put out in Magic a couple of years ago, which is a Bill Popper, Bill and Bill Popper.
Oh, that was, yeah, you put that out. That's right. That is very clever.
So that's what I do for a Bill and Lemon effect.
By the way, for those who want to go back and research that, what issue was that, do you recall?
That's a great point. I believe that was the March issue of 2011.
Possibly. And just a quick recap of the effect.
Oh, no, the August issue of 2011. Signed Bill into ungimmicked Party Popper.
And you guys know what party poppers are. You kind of pull the string, and then confetti comes out and everything.
I hope every magician knows what the party popper is.
Yes. Well, some people, they're overseas. You might be listening to this, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I did a little bit of research that, and they are available out there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then when you... when a spectator reaches in, they can pull their bill.
They can pull out the bill themselves.
Their signed bill out of the party popper.
Keep the party popper after, it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very good trick. So you use that in a stage.
I'll use that on stage and then in walk around, too.
I've done it in walk around, too. I think it's a great idea for walk around. It's one of my favorite go-to tricks, also. I like it. I carry it in my restaurant bag of tricks.
You can do it both ways, because some environments you can pull the party popper
mm-hmm.
if it's loud enough, but other times I don't want to actually make that much noise, so I'll just actually pull the contents of the party popper out and then have the spectator pull the bill out.
Come up with that idea? What was your creative process? Did you just wake up one morning and say, hey,
I was trying to do a different gimmicked version of Bill mm-hmm. in Lemon, and kind of went with the, I also like the gimmicks that Wait and Bloom uses for his ring flight. So if you put those two together, you can kind of see where a party popper might come in handy.
Hmm. But did you see a party popper and that kind of think, hey, I can have something come out of that? Or?
It was an accidental mystery, let's put it that way.
Okay, no, that's fine. I often wonder, you know, about how people's creative thought
the gimmick fits
goes.
Very well into a party popper.
Yeah, no.
That was the accidental mystery.
Oh, I see. Okay, that makes sense, certainly. And so, still a single guy, so you...
Still a single guy, so for all of those ladies that listen to the podcast, none of you. Please, MrCameronRamsey@gmail.com.
And so, so you got your own .com address now?
No, I just said gmail.com.
Oh, Gmail.
I do own it, though.
You do?
I own Google, yes.
You own Google.
That's just a share of it, at least. I have the Chromebook, so I don't know how much of a share that is, though.
And so, but the reason, I guess, that you're out here, of course, is to be on The Bachelorette, so that way that you're going to want to be one of the guys trying to vie for the girl's attention. Is that right?
I'm the bachelor. Actually.
You're the bachelor.
Yeah, I'm the star.
You're the star.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, if we're gonna talk about it, we might as well let it out of the bag now.
You're killing me.
Sorry. It's still early. It's the Sunday morning brunch.
That's right. It's a long night. So, anyhow, as far as the podcast, have you been doing anything at all, or is it once you were done, you just kind of moved on?
I have to say, once our days at the Magic Newswire were over, real life and magic life together took a...
I've kept in contact with Dodd. You know, people have asked me on several occasions, you know, what's up, and I know that he doesn't maintain, you know, on a regular basis the podcast. Of course he does. He said that a lot of people sort of going back into the archives. Mm-hmm. It's just with a full-time job that he had that demands more hours of his time.
I don't think people understand, you know, we would do a 2.5-hour podcast.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That would mean, oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He would probably have 5 or 6 hours of editing there alone.
Just for that, because he had to listen to it again, edit it, and then listen to it, make sure it was all fine.
So
the quality of his is better than the quality of mine. Now, the quality of discussion is here is always great.
At least the same.
That's right. But I just kind of, I don't process it necessarily, so I throw up some raw footage or audio so that way everybody can get it as quickly as they can, particularly when I'm going to magic conventions.
You did a great job editing out my swears in this podcast so far, though.
Thank you very much. Yes, that you and Simon Lovell are the two that are difficult to work with there on there. So do you get to the Magic Castle out here very often, LA?
I have to say, not that often. I was here in the fall to catch it a couple times,
yep.
But before this year, I hadn't been here actually since I was under 21, and I think I was probably like 15, so that's dating back 11 years.
So you came on
the
Sunday
ago.
Lunch, too.
I came on a Sunday brunch my first time here, like most youngins of our timeline.
Sure.
I'm adding you into that equation.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. So, so I know it's a long way, certainly, from the East Coast to get out here, so it's not some place you would drop in, so you'd have to make a concerted effort.
Yeah, I mean, when I was out here, it was for work, so it's or I haven't been able to do it because of work, but I mean, to be out here... how could I not come at any chance I have?
Yeah, if you're just anywhere close to the West Coast, let alone being in L.A., I mean, you got to make the additional effort
Whatever,
to get
yes.
over here. That's right. Because you always have such great talents, great, you know, I always enjoy the week just not only performing, and the audiences are great because people come out to see magic. They know what to expect because they're paying money to come and see magic as opposed to going around the tables, you know, and you're foisting magic on them or something. People, you know, already are... pre-approved, I guess, from the standpoint
that
they're...
It's a great audience, and they assume we're all celebrities.
That's right, that's right. Oh, gosh, yeah. and but also, just the other guys in and around the castle here who live in the L.A. area, who hang out, they're other magicians. You know, I've had a great opportunity. I went over to Dean Dill's, you know, had my haircut, and got to spend some more time with Dean. Did a podcast with him earlier, and he's just a fantastic guy, and brilliant thinker, and a great barber. Great.
I'm going to have to... Well, you know what? I'm going to open up shop here. I'm going to become a massage. I'm going to have a magic shop and a massage
therapist.
Yes.
Okay.
Not those kind of massage parlors. Yeah, not that.
Not the magic fingers.
No.
Kind of a thing.
Oh, God. You know what? We're going to edit that part out.
Maybe you could have a work in the back room with Dean, you know, over there, so he can, you know, that he can, because he, you know, washes your hair, and then you can kind of relax your shoulders and kind of massage them.
Oh, we're going deep here, aren't we?
That's right.
Oh, we're getting deep here.
Well, yeah, you know, when you're coming out of the bathroom, you know.
Yes, yes. I get that enough already.
I bet you do. So you've not had a chance actually to see any of the acts since you just got in, what, a couple days ago?
I got here on Thursday, and I've been busy ever since, and still house hunting. So if any of those listeners out there, please, I'm available.
Yeah, to watch their house. Yeah, and when while you're here, since you're going to be here for a while, hopefully in the evening you might have an opportunity to come over.
Oh,
here.
I'll be popping in and out of here frequently, yeah. I assume.
Yeah. I don't know who all is going to be coming up, but I'm sure you know a lot of the guys. You probably
I haven't looked at the schedule yet, but I'm sure I'll be up here quite often.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Cam, it's always a pleasure to see you there. Looks like they've let the room out, so probably going to be start. I think they did start to let out the room here. The lecture is going to be in the parlor. And so anything else you'd like to add?
Can I do the outro? I know the outro.
Yes.
All right. Scotty out.
Hello, this is Jack Goldfinger sitting with two prestigious magicians in the Magic Castle William Larson Senior Library. And today's date is June 16th, 2013, for you guys in the future.
So we're back in the future now.
And it's Father's Day to all you fathers out there. Happy Father's Day.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Happy Father's Day, Jack. Happy Father's Day, Doc.
Thank you.
Wow.
And to me, too.
Yeah.
So we all have grandkids. I know you do.
I do.
Yes.
Yes. You got a slew of them, don't you?
How many have you got?
Oh, yeah.
How many you got?
Do I have to?
No, you don't have to. I mean, that, you know.
You don't have to name their names.
Yeah.
He might not be able to do that anyway.
Let's just say I have, I think five.
Wow. Okay.
I got four, so not far behind you. One of them set of twins, which makes a nice little 3-year-old twins.
Yes.
He gets up there fast without just kind of shoots ahead with it.
Yeah.
So here we are in the library. What do you want to talk about?
Just a few things. I just want to say, just kind of wrapping up a fantastic week at the Magic Castle over here. It's just been stellar. It's been a long time since I've been back, and it's good to always be here just to perform for audiences who love to see magic, as well as to see friends who just are members and happening in, and kind of cool. And also, just also a couple things to talk with you, Jack, and then also then with Doc specifically. Jack, you're the entertainment director, and you've taken over from Max about a year or two ago from Max Maven. Is that right? He was the entertainment director.
That is correct.
And you made some changes. One of the I don't know how it was before, because I didn't work when Max was here necessarily, but with the butlers and everything else, I mean, you just had some really nice touches. I think they're so nice.
I did not make any changes. Some changes were made.
Okay, then.
I take no credit.
Okay, you were just the implementer, I guess, of the changes.
Yes, I think so.
You followed through on what the changes they had suggested.
Yes. Yes, jump or be pushed.
There you go. But it's very very nice, very classy. And now how far in advance do you typically book acts to come in? I mean, is it 6 months, a year?
I wouldn't want to give the wrong impression, so I'll pass on answering that.
That's not fair enough. I understand, because it may vary. There may be somebody that jumps in whatever.
Totally.
Yeah, you never know.
The Magic Castle is booked on circumstances and availability.
Yeah, and someone may be available all of a sudden, and you might have a situation. Well, I remember like when they had the fire, you know. I mean, certainly had to cancel a few people or postpone their appearance, I guess, for a while.
They were all rescheduled.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
No one complained.
They understood, of course.
And each and every one has been back since.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Several times.
Now, there were changes to the facility, though, after that. The close-up room and some of the things changed. I mean, like, obviously, new carpeting and paint job and things, I guess. What kind of physical changes did they make?
Oh, there was some new carpeting and paint.
Mm-hmm. All righty, then.
No, but it was during that remodel, wasn't it, Jack, that they took out a few of the seats, and so now you can stand in the close-up gallery again, because you couldn't do that before the fire.
And they raised it a little,
right.
And they also made it more wheelchair accessible.
Right.
They have a step that can be pulled out, and a chair can be placed in
mm-hmm.
to accommodate that particular customer.
Only at the Magic Castle can you take out two seats and add to the capacity by four. I don't know how much you're it really is a magic.
That is true. It's kind of like those Gazenta boxes or something.
Yes.
Well, the thing I like about it is that I remember seeing the pictures of the close-up gallery back when O.C. and Gushman and Vernon were the thing, and they were just jammed in that room.
That's right.
You know,
they were side by side, frame by frame.
I've always been an advocate and a fan of Bob Reed's advice: of, give me a room that seats 50. We'll put 70 in it and rock the room. You know, when you get people packed in there, the critical mass is
that's why you run the bar. You prefer to have people packed, don't you?
I prefer to have them packed in there.
Don't you?
It's electricity.
Don't you tell them to move in closer and everything all the time? Jam auction.
Well, yeah, kind of. But now you've got a feeling of there's a lot of people around in there. You know, the angles are a little bit different. I don't know if you're. You know, got an open top cylinder. Sometimes the guys in the back can look in there.
Well, that's what you're saying, Jack. Now it's raked higher, so that way they can
slightly.
See down slightly.
Yeah. Also, the parlor has been raked.
Oh, okay.
And since we now have the Peller Theater and we have the Jack Oakey Lounge where members can perform in,
mm-hmm.
and
which is right next to the Hatton here.
No,
it's right next to the library.
Oh, I guess I hadn't noticed that. Okay.
Yes.
Is that where they were teaching, Mark and Nani teaching the lessons?
Yes.
It's almost as a classroom.
I see.
But on the weekends, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Just on weekends.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the Jack Oakey Lounge.
Okay. And you were saying, though, I'm sorry, Doc, that you like it whenever people are going to be packed in there, certainly.
Yeah.
I think it is electricity. It's harder if you just have three or four people or...
Well, comedy like magic is tough in a small room, or magic like comedy is tough in a small room, you know.
Yeah.
You can have the best act in the room. You got four people out there, it's not going to play very well. But if you pack them in there, and I don't know, just people have more fun when they're packed in.
Right.
You know, so we're kind of approximating what happened in my mind, you know, back in the glory days of the castle. Actually, these are the glory days of the castle. There's no question about it. I've been coming out here off and on for almost 20 years. and never before has the castle been in such good shape, both physically,
and financially,
emotionally, everybody
structurally,
together
as
a team. It just doesn't seem like there's warring factions like there have been in the past.
Or financial problems, people talking in hushed tones and wondering about the future.
For the first time in a long time, and I think that a lot of things go into that. What do you think? You know, Neil Patrick Harris was a big
plus.
Yes. His contribution is tremendous. In fact, the whole board of directors and the board of trustees have made this turnaround what it is today.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. It's good to have a good, strong leader, but everybody seems to be all singing from the same hymnal, at least.
Yes, because a good leader knows when to follow.
Right, right.
And Neil's a pretty good follower and leader.
He's everything.
Mm-hmm.
He is everything.
He's not just a name who has lent himself.
He's
intimately involved in the workings.
He used to be a junior. He came up through the ranks. He loves magic.
Right.
He knows magic, and he's proficient at magic.
Right.
In fact, when he was just hosting the Tony Awards this year, 2013, he even put in some magic, and it was one of the talk of the opening.
That's true. Doc, I was getting back to you. One of the things that, since I last performed here in 97, they didn't have the bar, the W.C. Fields bar, and some, you know, they just had the hat and hair. And not only that, but they have also added as one of the categories for the awards, of course, of being the bar magician.
And not anymore.
They don't have that anymore? But they did for a while.
We did it for, I think, 2 years in a row.
And you won.
Well, I won the first ever, which was humbling. And then Witt won the second year. And then they figured... I'm not sure who the spearhead of that particular project was, but they looked at it and went, you know, there's really only a few guys that can work this bar, so we're just going to be passing the trophy
back
from
and
one
forth.
Person to person, and at the end of that thing, and so they you know, they don't give that out anymore, which is fine. I'm glad I got one, you know, found it on the shelf, you know, found another one like it,
yeah.
I think, you know, but
Dorothy Hamill won a gold medal for ice skating.
Yeah.
And they asked her, how did she do it? And she said, I came and showed them what I could do, and they gave this to me.
Mm-hmm. That's a very nice way
they
to state
gave it.
It
to you, Doc, because you showed us what you could do.
Yeah.
And you did it well.
Yeah.
What was that like, as far as that experience? I mean, coming out here, it seems like I remember you came with your son or daughter.
I made several trips to the altar, but I always walked away the bridesmaid, and I did have one of my kids, you know, I have three children, and, you know, every year I bring one of them out, and they go, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of that category is somebody else, and I go, okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
So the one year where my kids were all tied up, they had projects and school things going on, I said, I'm just going to go out there, go to the banquet, no problem. That was the year I wanted, you know, so... I didn't have. It's just the way it works out. So I gave up the. I showed up. They gave it to me. The one thing I don't like competitions. I think magic competitions are. I don't subscribe to them. I don't believe in them. I don't think you know. But this was not a magic competition. I didn't campaign for this.
Right.
You know, I live 1,000 miles away from this.
You just came, just like you said, and showed what you could do.
It was really humbling because I wasn't out there waving the flag and, you know, handing out perks and stuff to try and get by votes.
Can I interject a thought?
Please.
You're not honored for what you do. You are honored by what you do.
Jack, you're... A man poetic
with, isn't
tonight,
he?
Isn't he tonight?
Man with the words?
Boy, I'm not sure what he had to drink tonight, but I'm going to have something.
Have some rice tea there, right there.
Anyway, enough about that.
So you've been coming to the castle for a long time, though. I mean,
almost 20 years.
20 years.
You know, somebody asked me that the other night, and I think I can spend almost 20 years. Since
Every year? Once a year or two?
Well, once a year, twice a year. Now it's, you know, this is the second time in this year here, and I'll probably be up more up here because my granddaughter lives here.
Yeah, that's handy.
Yeah, that's
lives here in L.A.?
Yeah,
is that right?
Mm-hmm. 20 minutes away from here, so
yeah,
going to be easy for me to come out to.
It's funny how you say your granddaughter. She's like a year old. I mean, she just happened to be here with her parents.
Somebody said, well, really, how old is my granddaughter's here? Well, really, how old is she? Well, she's a year and a half. She's got her apartment in Westwood. She's living there, going to school. Of course, her parents are there, too. But, she's the big draw for me now. But you know, the castle has changed a lot. It used to be you have to save up for it so you can work the job.
Yeah, that's true.
Now it's not quite that way. They actually, you know, the the hard dollars are better, and the soft dollars are a lot better too. There's, they finally figured out that it was more cost effective to have a couple of apartments across the street, so that out of town guys like you.
I contribute that to Mr. Joe Furlow, the new general manager. He's doing an outstanding job, and he's the one who advocated to the board of trustees, and then they agreed with some of these things that he wanted to implement that made it better for each and every magician.
It is.
The apartments are
studio
great.
Apartments are not luxurious, but they are.
They've been remodeled, repainted. They got new furniture and everything in there. I mean, it's an older hotel that's been renovated, and it's what 100 feet from the castle, literally across the street.
Yeah.
And you got the Don Lawton Suite and the John Calvert. Very, very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, they feed us well here now. Mm-hmm. You know, the little posse card thing. And
right.
So we order off the menu. They have a butler now that you don't have to
that's
chase
just
down
so cool.
the guy. And
yes.
He's brought my martini here. Yeah.
Yes. So they're making it a lot easier. Which, you know, with all due respect, with the castle, where when they were back, you know, either they had the same guys working, or if you came in from out of town, you'd have to take a big hit on your income. You
mm-hmm.
know, it used to be you have to save up for it so you can work it.
Right.
Well, it's not that way now. I mean, I'm certainly not going to retire on what they're paying me, but
you're not going to lose money.
I'm not going to lose money this time around, and there's nothing quite like working at the castle. I mean, you know, some people poo-poo it. It's, I killed at the castle. Let me get it right. You killed at the castle. Well, yeah, but you know, when they're chanting your name, like, well, okay, I think I qualify.
As I was walking out last night, there's some lady rolled down her window. She was rolling out and said, Scott. And it's like, some lady was on my show and said, love the show. You made me cry. I was laughing so hard.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, you made my night. You know, I mean, you're right. Sometimes it's good and bad. You know, it's just...
Well, 50 years old, you know, the castle's now 50 years old. The academy is 50 years old. The castle's older than that, but... you know, it's coming on to its own, and I don't, you know, I can't help but think that Wonderstone.
Yeah.
And Now You See Me.
Now You See Me.
And the Deceptive Practices.
Plus, what's going on in Vegas?
Yeah.
The live shows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, I think magic is kind of cresting again. You know, and it's good. I think it's gone through ups and downs, up and down.
Derek Delgadio and Helder
right.
Gimeras. If I'm saying it wrong, I apologize, but that team has set the benchmark,
right.
And magic has gone up a notch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's suddenly very legitimate. I mean, the LA Times go fabulous and go see it,
right?
You know, and that's I haven't had the chance to see that show, but
it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And the castle is a place, and surely that it's going to be more difficult than Jack on your job, certainly, of having more professionals who weren't working before who are now going to be calling you saying, hey, now it is a profit thing and that I won't lose money, that, yes, I want to come out to work, so it's going to be harder to say.
Well, that adds to Jack. We're sitting here blowing smoke at each other across the table here, but Jack Goldfinger has one of the hardest jobs in the castle. Trying to figure out how to get everybody in there.
And reporting to everybody.
Everybody's not throwing the blinking rings at the same show.
Yeah.
And the variety of the stuff that Jack's been able to put together, and the special appearances with Harry Anderson, and
Jack is not doing it alone. For the Palace, I have the wisdom of Mr. Brian Lee. For the close-up, I have John Armstrong. And for the parlor and Peller and other things, Max Maven. Mm-hmm. I am totally not doing it alone.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, after all of these things, and the Magic Castle has a spirit all of its own.
Yeah.
That, you know, they think that I'm making choices. See, magicians make the public think that they have free choice. They say, pick a card, any card. And sure enough, they think that they have the ability to fool the magician, but the magician knows that there's no choice. I do not make choices. I make decisions. Decisions are based on no choice. If you go before a judge and the judge sees you had one iota of choice, you go to jail. If he sees you had no choice, it becomes self-defense and you walk. You don't want to prove you had choice. You want to prove you had no choice. I am making decisions, gentlemen, not choices.
Wow. Wow.
I rest my case.
That's right.
Let's turn it to the jury. Well said, Jack. Well said. still, my hat's off to you because, you know, you are the point person.
You're the
but
face.
If they've got a problem with it, they're not going to go to Johnny Armstrong or Max Maven. They're
That's right.
They're going to go to you because you're the guy wearing the red paper hat. But it's a tough job to balance it and have consistent, making it a little easier, I would think, to have consistent, high-quality guys if you make it more attractive for people.
The Magic Castle only has the best until the best shows up.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So the bar is continually being pushed up.
Totally. And the ones who get the major calls are the ones who deliver. Mm-hmm. Once mm-hmm. again, like yourselves, okay? An analogy, two guys are chopping down a tree. One guy doesn't take time to sharpen his axe. The other one goes and sharpens that axe and comes back and chops down three trees compared to the guy with the dull axe.
Right.
I like to come with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Cut down more of them.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, anyway, it's the castle is different. It's, you know, some of your listeners have been out here in the past. Forget about it. The castle is a new place these days.
Consider this also. Good is the enemy of great.
Another 50 saying. Yes,
wow.
Indeed, yes.
Man, you're heavy. You're dropping some bombs on us here.
Boy, I'll tell you what. Let me write this down. Here,
can well, you can record this. You can listen to it later.
I'll chisel it into the screen of my iPhone. the level is always being pushed up.
So what is the future of the castle? Been here 50 years. I mean, the board certainly got a direction, some goals. Are there more plans? They're going to expand.
I have also been taught to know the future is to change it.
Mm-hmm. My gosh. Ask him any question. Yeah. He's like an oracle.
Really? I'm burning incense here now.
Goodness sakes. We're sitting here with
much wisdom imparted to
our legs crossed.
Right. I'm still working on
it. I'll put it this way. I don't know the future. I just book it.
Good idea. Yeah, there's always surprises going on here, and you never know. And Milt's got a few surprises still up his sleeve.
Yes, he does.
And years ago, I was privy to some of the plans, and they just sounded like pipe dreams and smoke-filled beakers. But I, you know, now that there's funding and the lease is in place and the Glovers are happy and Milt's happy and the board is moving forward, I look forward to some very exciting changes.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be something that's new that's pretty close.
When you think that our new treasurer came on board, Randy Sinek,
yeah.
And he signed business interruption insurance 2 weeks before the fire, it was meant to be.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, and, what timing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that would almost sound suspicious.
Some circumstances, of course.
We didn't set the fire.
No, we didn't.
No. Idiot roofers did. But the fact that, yes, he you know.
So we are still being looked, I would like to think, in my moments, that all those magicians that came before us and the ones who, you know, are not coming back to complain mm-hmm. are still taking care of the Magic Castle in their own way.
Yeah.
Now, those people who are listeners as well who want to come out, and this is a private club. I mean, I have been outside when the valets are turning away people saying, sorry, it's a private club because they're just one.
And the dress code.
And the dress code, too. Can you give a little bit of information then for those who might want to come? If you're a member of the IBM or SAM, can you show a card? Do you need to be a guest of a member or performer and the dress code and the age, et cetera? Give some of the rules here.
I'll let you...
Well, I'll you fill in where I might drop off. No one under 21 is admitted. It's a nightclub for adults. The only time that children, the kids can be, anyone under 21 can be admitted is during Saturday and Sunday brunch. Strict dress code, coats and ties for men, dresses for the ladies. Think elegant evening.
Cocktail
attire. This is the time to dust off the tuxedo or the party dress or whatever you might be wearing. Opens the doors at 5 o'clock, and they start serving at 6. You have to have dinner when you come in. Elegant dinner. They got a new chef upstairs. That's
great food.
Very good.
Man, good sea bass is something.
Yeah, the food is terrific these days, I think. But now the castle has never been about the food, but you know, but if you get bad food, you hear about it. So
yep. it certainly complements the magic.
It certainly complements it, and they do a heck of a job up there too. They push these people through.
Oh my gosh!
So you can push them out in time to hit the show.
But you don't feel like you are. But they help you make the shows in time.
Absolutely.
And you have to have the dinner in order to get a ticket for the main palace show.
Right.
Without that, it's just first come first serve seating.
Right.
Right.
Only in the big room.
Right.
You know.
For the rest, that
yeah.
You just.
But they've also added the Peller down here in the inner circle, which is another nice, really nice venue. What is that seat in there, Jack? The Peller.
40.
The 40 in here?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And standing room.
Right. And they allow them to stand in there too. So
yes.
It seemed like there was more than 40 in there last night when I looked in.
Mm-hmm.
I
saw that it had a max seat capacity of 40. It said on a little sign. So I counted the seats.
Are you with the fire marshal's office?
Not officially. Okay. However, I'm wearing a red tie. You know why they wear red suspenders?
Yeah.
Keep the pants up.
There you go.
Yeah.
Boom.
I think the term is, as far as the dress code, we would like for them to have an upscale, pick an upscale look.
Yeah. They don't need to wear a dress necessarily if you're a lady, because, in other words, if Hillary Clinton came with pantsuit, if it's appropriate, that would be acceptable in a pantsuit.
I'm not going to answer that.
Okay.
It better be darn nice. That's all I can say.
Hillary. Yeah.
I have seen them, some very people who think that they are above the law,
mm-hmm.
turned away.
Because they
did not comply.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they come in, then it's going to make everyone else
say, how come you let them? I don't care who they are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we would like for everyone to please cooperate.
Right. Now, again, if you are a magician, you can come without being a member. If you are outside, say, California. See, people, somebody's coming in from Minnesota. You know, could they call and make a reservation for dinner if they belong to the IBM or SAM or something?
They should call and they can make the reservation, but they should first have proof or identification of their credentials saying
membership.
That I'm a member of the IBM, mm-hmm. SAM.
Okay.
And,
because years ago, whenever the Larsons ran Genie magazine, it seemed like if you had a subscription to Genie that you were able to to come in. Of course, now it's Richard Kaufman's running it, so that's no longer an issue. But as long as you were still a member of a recognized organization, magic organization, then they would allow you access and your guests to a certain number, I guess.
Yes. The magicians who are performing here, they get 70 guests a week.
Mm-hmm.
But on the Saturdays, when we reach capacity quite quickly, they're asking each of the acts to limit it to 10 that particular night.
Night, right.
Yes. But the wonderful thing about working the Magic Castle is that in every audience, there's a buyer.
Yeah, you never know who it is either.
That's right.
So you got to make every show good, too. You know, that's what I remember Scott Hollingsworth was talking about the Magic Island and saying that they're given the choice of somebody who is going to be, just deliver a solid show, you know, it's going to just knock it out of the park, you know, every once in a while, you know, versus someone who's solid, you know, every show. You know, he'd rather have that person who's solid every show, because that there are those uneven shows that may not be as great as the one that gets knocked out of the park, you know, kind of a thing. He said, I want a worker, you know.
This is the academy. There is a learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
We have juniors, we have disciples, we have masters, and we have grandmasters.
Good point.
We are dealing with the world. This is not just a closed community. We realize there are magicians from Tannins to Abbots to England, Spain, Portugal, Asia, South America, North America, and everyone is welcome.
Mm-hmm.
It is your talent that gets you in and gets you to wherever you're going.
Yeah.
And usually you can tell whether someone has the chops or not. What do you think about that, Doc?
Well, I was just thinking about that, because I think one of the questions that I get a lot are, how do you get to work the castle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got to put together a video and you got to send it to Jack Goldfinger.
It's kind of like getting to Carnegie Hall, isn't it?
Yeah, practice, practice, practice. Exactly. You got to, you know. But you have to have an act together, and you have to have it on video.
Yes. No recommendations, no edits, no credits. Just the act as it would be performed here at the Magic Castle. Stand and deliver, and when you send in a DVD, or you can post it online as a link, consider the Magic Castle's dress code, because we have people send in DVDs dressed in tank tops and T-shirts and blue jeans.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, without even seeing it, you're already sitting in the hole there.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta dig your way out.
Keep it together. Yeah. That's the way to do it. Send a videotape and
but have an act.
But have an act. Have an act that you can do.
And again, for close up, it's 18 minutes. Parlor, it's.
We're asking more than 15, not more than 20.
Okay, and then for the palace, I noticed that you now have a lot of people who just have like one act as opposed to two or three like it used to be. Or do you still do that?
Some of the folks coming in from Europe cannot bring the furniture.
Sure.
And so they have. An act. There is a difference between an act and a show.
Yep.
And some of these acts, I remember the Ed Sullivan Show.
When
the people came on with acts, Mr. Electric, Johnny Long, Channy Pollock.
Yeah.
Channy Pollock had 7 minutes. Channy once went to do a nightclub, and the guy said, how much time are you doing? He said 7 minutes. He said, I need a 45-minute show. And he says, you can't work here. And the agent insisted, just see the show. And it was the best 7 minutes. The line was around the block to see it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, Fred Capps, another one over there.
Fred Capps, And when you gentlemen can relate that you've been there, you've done that, you've seen it, And some of the newer ones coming up, they think that YouTube is it.
Well, now, Jack, you've worked pretty much literally around the world, and like Monaco for the princes and all that. You've had some pretty exciting shows and exciting life. You know? Do you see yourself in retirement, semi-retirement? You're still performing? What are you doing now? I mean, I see it here, but I mean.
Dove and I have been around the world.
Yeah.
We have stayed in hotels that had pictures on the wall of hotels we should be staying in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not living like a millionaire.
Hey, it's like water. You take the shape of the container you're in.
Listen to this guy. Yeah, exactly.
Oh. I have a whole new vocabulary and a whole new set of metaphors to deal with.
So, yeah. Yes.
Well, and you've been asked this question, I'm sure, before, and it's probably like choosing children, but what were some highlights of your performing career or places you've been or something? I mean, if you were going to write a book like Mr. Electric has or whatever, what kind of things or shows kind of pops out?
You know, every magician. Have you wrote a book, Doc? How many books?
Oh, God. Well, I have some magic books, how-to magic books, and I have one in the works that is like trying to give birth to a child.
I can appreciate it. I'm doing one, too.
Hard to get out. But I don't have the Mr. Electric book or the,
The stories.
Quite yet. It's all in galleys. It's getting there. But it's not done yet.
Neither do I. I think that I'm going to wait for someone else to write our book.
There you go.
Goldfinger and Dove. Somebody will come along. They'll do the research in the library. The evidence is on video here and it's on the web. And success leaves clues.
There's another one.
Yeah, another
I
one.
Hope these guys. You should tell everybody at the top of the show they should have a notebook together because
there are some gems
being dropped here.
Okay. Yep, it's going to be about that time. So we're wrapping up, and I got to go do my show then also. You guys have been stellar, and this has been just a great week, and I appreciate seeing friends again over here for this. Let me ask you, because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. The question is, what is your magic word? Everybody's got something. It's a philosophy you may live by. It's not necessarily like abracadabra or hocus pocus. It could be a phrase, a mantra. It's something that you believe in. I get a word or phrase or something.
When I was in Japan, I was turned on to the concept of Ichigo, I-C-H-I, is the letter one, number one. Go is an encounter. So I-C-H-I, go, I-C-H-I-E. I-C-H-I-E is a moment in time. One moment in time, one chance in a lifetime. It's a Buddhistic concept that I'm still trying to put my arms all the way around, but every meeting that we have in our lives, and this is straight from Buddhism, is a sacred meeting.
It just like this.
Never happen, this, may, this, this three around the
cannot.
Table, it may never happen again.
Yeah.
And even if it does happen again, it's not going to be quite the same. It's going to be different. But it's there's something sacred about the meetings that we have. And that's kind of, when I was turned on to it, I began to look back at my life as a magician. And that's what it was. I try and honor every relationship that I have over the bar, you know, as a separate and distinct and important aspect. And
it's not just a show, but they're individual people who are unique.
And yeah. You never know how you're going to touch somebody with that philosophy in mind. So that's how I live my life, anyway. One chance in a lifetime, one moment in time.
Jack?
All you need is love.
Wow.
And I love you, Jack. I'll tell you what, pal. It's great.
That's
you
fantastic.
Too, Scotty.
Thank
boy,
you,
that's
Doc.
Great. And I love all your listeners. Be sure and send
yes.
money.
We love you all.
Thanks a lot. All right, for the Magic Castle. All right, well, I'm getting ready for my last show of the evening and of the week here at the Magic Castle. And one person who's been in every night over here is a longtime member and friend, Shute Agawa. Hello, Shute.
Hello. How are you, everyone? And hello, Scott.
Hello, great. Glad to have you over here. We'll try to be kind of brief because we're going to start to load up this room here shortly.
Yep.
But again, you've been coming every night, so you've been a member of the Magic Castle for a while.
Yes, I've been a member almost like 16 years.
16 years?
Yes.
Goodness. Okay.
I'm a little older than you think.
Is this one of the first things you did when you moved over here? You came straight to L.A. or where did you?
Yeah, of course, the Magic Castle was the main reason why I moved to the States. Like I visited the castle when I was 14, when I was young age.
Yes.
But, I became a member, of course, when I became 21.
21.
So, but I moved here when I was 25 or 6 years old. So, but main reason is
to come to the Magic Castle.
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
This was your big draw. This is why you came.
Absolutely. And only 1 week of a booking of Magic Castle. That's it. No other gig, but I decided to move to the States.
Just because the one thing you said, this is the
this
mecca,
is the
this is the ultimate.
Place, best
yeah.
place.
What was it about it that made was the draw? Why did you want to come? What was it?
The
mystique?
Several reasons, but in when I was 26, I already know about Magic Castle like 12 years.
Yeah.
And also,
in Japan, they talk about that?
Yeah, Magic Castle is also popular for the many Japanese magic, or in the world, of course.
Yes.
And then, pretty much, if someone perform one time in their life, it's, great career for the, magic.
Sure.
But of course, but, I didn't want to just, be, 1 week magician. I want to be here all the time.
Yeah.
And I want to discuss with many magicians. That's why I moved to here, the States.
And so that gives you certainly an opportunity to rub shoulders and talk with a lot of magicians. Why you come in every night, I guess. So
yeah, and I didn't speak English at the time. I don't know how I talked to them, but but somehow I booked other gigs for the conventions and other stuff.
Yes.
After a few months, because I was being here every night, mm-hmm. and I was performing my magic. I was pretty fine at the time already.
Yes.
So and people liked me, and I remember my friends or some people said, "Hey, why you don't come to the convention?"
And you were doing Ninja Rings back then.
Yeah, I was doing already Ninja Rings, Matrix, and some several card magic, and also mm-hmm. the rope tricks, many major tricks which I'm doing right now.
Yes.
And I was already doing some part of that one.
Those are things for which you are most well known. Have you got some things now that you're moving on? What are new things you're?
I first few years I was doing close up magic because I couldn't move with my equipment anything, so just I brought two suitcases to move to the States. So but after 5 years I shifted the parlor and stage, and last 5 years I was focusing about parlor. Mm-hmm. So my act is pretty much my favorite size of theater is around 70 people to the 150.
Yes.
That's my best size right now. So I have many new routines. Last 5 years I had at least 4 or 5 major routine. Mm-hmm. For the parlor sides of the
yes.
theater. So then I'm focusing stage, so this year I'm start to create the stage magic more.
Yes.
So, hopefully.
Now, do you do magic full-time when you came out here? Was that what you were
doing? Yeah, I just was doing magic, I'm very nerd, so I still love magic all the time and hanging out with magicians, so same as before.
That's what I was thinking when you first came over from Japan. I mean, that's quite a commitment to say, I'm moving all the way overseas to L.A. to be around the Magic Castle and not speaking English, and I'm going to do magic. This is my dream.
Yeah, it wasn't my dream, but some people laughed. Some people really take seriously,
sure.
And I was very serious, but as you know, when we do magic, like even we don't have to make big money to just have a, you know, enjoyment
sure.
from magic. So and you know, like money came later, of course.
Yes.
But, like you know, the people was very cheering me when I was in Japan mm-hmm. to move to the States. But many people said also it's stupid because I don't have any gig in the States. So.
But you never thought twice. You thought this is it, and you're glad to look back. You've enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you made a good decision.
Of course, it was a challenge for me. But you know, the when I challenged, like you know, the we kind of found out, you know, it was much fun than, you know, I was just staying in Japan, so.
Sure.
Yeah, I was, I never really regret to move to the States.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they're getting ready to load the room up,
yeah,
so we're going to have to be short on this one. Sorry, guys, but we'll get together with Shoot at another time down at the convention. We can sit down and have a longer chat just about some other magic, but I thought we'd talk about the castle here. But before we close, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word?
Magic word? Oh, God, I have to close up right away. I don't know. I don't
have it doesn't have to be like abracadabra or whatever. It could be like, what is the credo? What is your life?
Maybe I feel I would say like the magic. This word is you know the already special for me. So it's connect to everyone and my friends.
Connect
with magic.
So connection, so. Connect.
Yeah, I would say connect. Okay, sure.
Yeah. Okay. No. You say you try to connect with everyone with your magic.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, good. No, I wish we had some more time. That'd be great. Thank you very much. That was Shutagawa here at the Magic Castle in Hollywood, California. So for now, Scotty out. Well, the week is over. I'm back in the Don Lawton suite, and it's almost 2 a.m., and I've been working on finalizing this podcast because I really think it's kind of important that I get this out as quickly as I can so that you guys can enjoy this as well in almost real time. I've had a great time during this past week, and I hope you've enjoyed this overly long podcast, which comes to about 3 hours. Hopefully it seemed just almost like 3 minutes visiting with some old friends, because that's certainly what it's been like for me. Well, I head back early tomorrow morning in the airport, so I've got to be getting out of here soon. So I've got to pack my stuff and leave in just a few hours. And so, hope you enjoyed this podcast of The Magic Word. Until next time, this is Scotty out.